Okay. Tokyo.
South America.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the end of another week, 1 minute past the hour of 6 o'clock here on the East Coast. West Coast, of course, a minute after 3, and let's see, it's about 10 in the morning in Sydney, Australia, where Chief Engineer John Fox makes his home. We try to cover the globe here on the Horn, and I think we do a passing fair job at it. It being a Friday and all, you know, of course, that means it's Front Porch Friday. Cussing and discussing raised to a high art. Or perhaps old school conversation in the purest vein of the idea of conversation radio. A lot of stories out there this evening, as there usually are. Slow news days do happen from time to time, though, but it's past Christmas, the holidays are over, and we're back to the gritty business of keeping up with right-wing hate, right-wing madness, right-wing evil, and all the things that sort of go with it. And there's plenty of it, like I said, plenty of it tonight. And let's get it. I want to start a little something new this evening, if you don't mind, and I think you will enjoy it. Those of you who used to listen to Joe Vecchio's show when he was on every day know that on Fridays he would frequently have a conversation with Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. MakeThemAccountable.com. Carolyn keeps a close eye on the media, keeps a close eye on the news, and sends out a summary every day that is of absolutely absolutely a must-have if you're trying to keep up with the goings-on in this mad world, whether it be political, social, cultural, and, of course, media-oriented. It's on my short list of things that are a must-read every day. And so I thought we might renew that conversation with Carolyn, and she has kindly agreed to do so. On the line with us now, Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. Caro, thanks so much for joining us this evening. I trust you're well.
Hi, Bob. I certainly am, and thanks so much for asking me.
It's a real pleasure. I always enjoyed sitting here behind the board when you and Joe would have your conversations, and about 90% of the time I was wanting to jump in and go, because, you know,
it is anger-making, yes, it is.
Well, some of it is. Some of it absolutely is. You know, you've and frankly, you know, we do the 3 hour thing every night, but I often wonder how somebody like you can stand living in the world simply because it's like you never get a break from it. You're just immersed in this stuff, aren't you?
Yes, I do spend hours and hours every day reading things and trying to put them together. I actually do a whole news a whole posting that has world news, national news, a little bit on the economy and finance and media, which is the portion that I send to you, and then also technology and science, which interests me, and the environment, because I like to keep abreast of what's going on with that. So folks, if you want a good summary of the news today, I think Make Them Accountable is the best place to go. Especially important in this election year. What I try to do is pull out the things that I think citizens need to know in order to know what's going on in their world and to know how to vote and so on. So but as the way I handle it, I had to do this very early on. I started doing this kind of research on a daily basis in 2000 because I became so upset with the way the mainstream media were treating Al Gore as opposed to George Bush. Al Gore was mean, awful bad. Every little stupid thing that the Bush Oppo team made up about Al Gore was touted from the treetops, you know, but they weren't asking, and still to this day have not asked George Bush the tough questions about the sale of the Texas Rangers, about the Harkin Energy and
Spectrum 7.
It was insider trading. There's just no question about it. About a lot of things that should have been. We knew in 2000 that he went AWOL, you know, and was never held to account for that. So because I was getting angry every day, I said, I have to handle this differently. If I'm going to continue to do this, I have to handle it differently. And so what I decided was that in reading all of this material and gathering it and pulling it together, I had to put myself in learning mode, that not in anger mode, but in learning mode. What can I learn from this? What can I pull from this to figure out how we can combat the right-wing craziness, as you mentioned in your intro, this hold that these people have on this country. How can I counter that? And so that's pretty much the way I handle all of this stuff.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the motivating factor was the disparate treatment that you saw Al Gore getting as opposed to George Bush. Nothing's changed, Caro.
I know. It's just amazing.
I'm looking at a report right now regarding a comment recently made by Candy Crowley over at CNN, and this stuff is just astonishing to me because let me see if I can distill a question out of this before I just start losing my mind. Do these people understand, I mean, do they ever step back and, I mean, is there an ombudsman anywhere who says, you know, guys, this is so transparent as to be ludicrous, the kid gloves approach you take with Republicans versus the hardcore approach you take with Democrats. And what I'm referring to right now is a comment made by Candy Crowley saying, let's see, here's the quote. Not much need for an answer anyway. It's a pretty good bet that if Bill Clinton feels that way, and he does, then she does too. And then they cut to a quote from Senator Clinton saying, obviously we want as many people as possible to be able to participate. And then Crowley follows up by saying, it's been like that a lot lately. A rendition of good cop, bad cop, ganging up mostly on Barack Obama. And this is the operative phrase, Caro, and I saw it just a little bit ago I got dents in my desk from the kicking I do. She applies the velvet shiv.
Yeah. Well, what I would like folks to remember is that Obama grew up in Chicago politics.
Yeah, that right. Not
Please don't tell me that Obama is this innocent, naive, whatever he may be.
No. It's a that's
you know. So that's number one. Number two. Yes, they have their favorites and they have their unfavorites. And Hillary Clinton has been an unfavorite. Well, Bill Clinton too was an unfavorite of most of the media, and Hillary Clinton is as well. Why I still to this day do not understand that they came to Washington and broke some kind of rule or something. I don't know what it was.
Gave away the high sign or the lodge handshake or something.
The secret handshake, my God.
But what, you'd never catch a Candy Crowley or a John King or a David Gregory referring to John McCain using a shiv on someone.
No. No, you wouldn't. Especially, you wouldn't hear that about a Republican. And that's one of the biggest discrepancies. For some reason, right now, they're liking Barack Obama, okay? But if it happens that he becomes the lead candidate and then becomes the candidate, the gloves are going to be off on him as well because, the media do not like a Democrat of any sort. and they do not like Republicans that act like Democrats, that act sane or anything like that.
Do you think this is stuff that flows from the top down, or is it just
certainly. But it's not orders. At least at Fox News, it's orders. They get a memo every day. This is what you're going to cover. This is what you're going to stress. This is what you're going to, you know, these are the talking points, you know, to save Republicans and skewer Democrats. But elsewhere, it's not really that. It's a culture of, if you want to be in with the in crowd, you know, if you want to make the big bucks, the multi-million-dollar per year salary, look what happens to the people that are tough on Democrats, like Tim Russert, for example. He makes millions of dollars a year, okay? And was it Claire Shipley was on, you know, one of those? She's one of the few that ever turned away from that, you know, and started trying to do sane reporting. Well, she was kicked off, you know. So all they have to do is see what happens. You know, they see that the people that are mean to Democrats and oh, I love those Republicans.
Yeah, you see the body floating in the river, and it gets a lot easier to be a partisan.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so it's astonishing, and it makes it so thoroughly cheapens the process. You know, you had the apology, but not really an apology, if you will, coming from Chris Matthews and
Tweety Bird.
Yeah, Tweety Bird, exactly. And yet, it was half-hearted at best, and certainly nobody else in the press, unless you caught it, and I didn't. There's nobody else out there saying, well, you know, we've got, it's not just him, we've got to look at the way the rest of us behave, too. There's still no institutional culture of examination. Do these people have ombudsmen or anything? I mean, I know the New York Times
does. Well, the newspapers do have ombudsmen. I'm not sure if the networks do at all. And the problem has been that the Washington reporting and pontificating community has become so enmeshed with the power structure, unless, of course, that power structure is Bill and Hillary Clinton. See, they didn't give enough parties. That was one of the things. And, of course, Sally Quinn, wife of Ben Bradley, who, you know, has these soirees on Sundays and so on. They were some of the biggies. And that was one of the complaints that she made. She wrote this whole column about why the Clintons failed in Washington or something like that. It was partly because they didn't give enough parties.
Not enough shrimp. Oh, my God.
See, these people go to the same parties. They talk to each other. They buddy-buddy and all.
In other words, it's incestuous.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. Incestuous with each other and with the politicians and with the sources of the power structure. One of the first things I thought about when Bush started, you know, actually moving into the administration and the White House, I read an article that said, oh, and so many of the reporters that were on his press plane when he was a candidate are going right to the White House press corps, and it's going to be so great and so wonderful because they have such a rapport with the president, and, you know, with Bush. And I'm going, these guys should be fired. If they have a rapport with him, they ought to be fired.
Yeah, you know,
adversarial relationship.
Yeah, go back to covering sanitation board meetings or something. You know. Oh, I know. You know, one of the things I saw on your summary that went out today that just sort of grabbed me. Early on, you point out something, and again, the media is not doing it. This myth of the three-way tie in the Republican race for the nomination.
Yes.
Honest to God, I think I pay attention, Caro. But doggone it, I read this thing and it's like, oh well, I'll be darned. I didn't realize that Romney was out in front by, you know, in excess of 13 delegates or something like that. It's
right.
it's 2-1 him over Huckabee over McCain.
Right. Right, you see, that would get in the way of the narrative. That's really, honestly, what happens is that these people develop a narrative, and they feed on each other, and they admire each other, and so one feeds off the other, and so on. And the narrative gets in the way of actually examining what's happening. And that is why we internet activists got started in the first place. I started before blogging software was available, so I've never really considered myself a blogger, but I and BuzzFlash and Skippy the Bush Kangaroo and the Smirking Chimp and
Bart Cop.
Bart Cop is ancient. You know, he's from the mid 90s. So we were the first ones that got started, and then along came blogging software. And silly me, I didn't pay attention to it until way too late. And in the meantime, you know, these other guys had already taken off with that. But we came into existence because of this disparity between what we're seeing and what they're reporting and what they're commenting on.
Yeah, well, it's like the thing about the two blind men trying to describe an elephant. You know, and so
blind men trying to describe
an
elephant.
Very well paid blind men at that.
yes.
Now. I worked for a time in major media, a couple of years. I was with CNN. And I remember how it was with us working around the newsroom. We thought all the correspondents were a bunch of egomaniacal, you know, gas bag goofs.
You were right.
We had nicknames for them. And sat there, you know, cutting tape on them and stuff and making fun of them. And I wonder if, you know, I don't know, if you got somebody from inside a newsroom, say at CBS or ABC, and you jacked them up with some sodium pentothal or something, you think you could ever get the truth out about how supercilious and how smug these people are?
No,
and how they do maintain their narratives?
They think they're telling the truth. They think they're imparting wisdom to the American people. And it doesn't matter, Bob, how often they're wrong, which is all the time. You know, they're predict again. They're wrong, and they come back and predict again. With the same level of, you know, I know everything and you know nothing, it's just amazing. You would think eventually they'd say, you know, I've been wrong 99 times out of 100. Maybe I ought to shut up.
Well, you would think that. But now let me back up for just a second, though, because... I no longer refer to these things as debates. I refer to them as pageants. Okay.
Pageants.
Because it's
okay,
everything short.
Candidate pageants. Okay.
Yeah. It's everything short of the swimsuit and the heels.
We'll get to that.
Oh God, I hope not. I watched excerpts from the pageant the other night. And what I want to ask you, you know, within this culture of they think they're telling us the truth. When Brian Williams got around to asking Barack Obama and it was a question only by virtue of being an excuse for him to reread the same old tired viral email that's run all over the internet about Barack Obama went to a madrasa, you know, took the oath of office on a Quran, all of that stuff. Are you telling me that there's somebody back in the production truck whispering into his IFB going, good question?
I honestly don't know how they come up with this stuff. I do know that Tim Russert is a gotcha guy. He does all the research he possibly can and gets in touch with the you know, opposition research groups for the candidates and so on, and tries to play gotcha. You know, you said this time, and now you're saying this time. How can you reconcile those two? That gets very boring to me, you know. I just want to know. I really wish we could see more people having the opportunity to elucidate what their ideas are and what they want to do for the country and so on. Of course, that would leave some people without much to say because their only desire is to actually be in office, and they don't necessarily, you know, you think about the movie The Candidate,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
with Robert Redford, where he finally gets elected and he says, now what? What am I supposed to do now?
Right. And that, at that point, you've got the tiger by the tails and the tail and the ears, and all you can do is hang on and ride.
Let me
ask you, how much do you think, how much complicity do you think there is? Because you know these campaigns, be they Democrat or Republican, these campaigns don't just walk blindly into these pageants. There's a great deal of negotiation. There's a great deal of back and forth over who's going to sit where and what the...
Oh, it's not just that. There's a huge amount of preparation as well.
So how much complicity... How much
candidate.
How much of this is like Saturday Night Wrestling down at the National Guard Armory? How much of this is scripted? How much do they know in advance? For instance, I got to admit, I was disgusted by the absence of Dennis Kucinich in the Nevada debate, especially by virtue of the fact
that
he'd been invited in the first place.
Yes.
And then disinvited, and yet it was sort of home on the range with the big three candidates, because never was heard a discouraging word, and nobody seemed to be bothered by that.
Well, see, it's not just the media either. It's the candidates, and because the candidates are being advised by media consultants who say, you know, you have to act this way and you have to pretend this and so on. And, you know, if you remember, there was a big flap in 2000 about somebody who was working, I forget the exact circumstances, she was working for one of the candidates, I think it was Bush, helping to prepare Bush, and she had the preparation book and all of that, and she sent it to the Gore campaign.
I do remember that. You're right.
And fortunately, the person of the Gore campaign said, I ain't touching this, I'm calling the FBI, you know, and a very good thing that they did, too. And but that just points out that there are many books questions are thought of, questions are answered. They go through the rehearsal where somebody plays the other candidate or the other candidates. Somebody plays the wrestler character. Lots and lots of role playing where they try to think of all the possible questions. And the job of the candidate is not to answer the question, but to get the candidate's points out to the public in this mealy-mouthed sort of...
That's the thing, though. I've just gone selectively deaf or something, Caro, but what points? I mean,
the points are all... They're not issue points. I'm not saying issue points. They're saying... they're trying to project an image, and their points are things that help them project their image.
So, as I was stroking my little kitten the other day, I was thinking about the... Yeah.
There you go. Or as I was talking with a blind, deaf, quadriplegic who works three jobs and,
And has no insurance.
And has no insurance. And I patted that person on the head and said, buck up. We're going to fix things. Because we are the...
So I take it from what I'm hearing from you, Caro, that you don't have a lot of optimism in terms of actually hearing any issues discussed anytime soon.
It's certainly not not in the national media, no. One good thing is that there are some places that you can go to get these things discussed, and that's one of the reasons that I'm just so glad that blogs exist nowadays, because... For example, on economic issues, the two blogs that I read are Paul Krugman's blog and his columns at the New York Times, and Mark Toma at Economist View. I read those every day, and they pull out the essence of what people's agendas are on healthcare and economic stimulus and those sorts of things, energy programs, energy policies, and so on. And they actually discuss the merits of the issues. So those are the places that you have to go to get that information.
There is impressive information out there, and there's a load of smart people. And one of the things that I've been impressed with over the years is the fact that the average Joe has, at least in the you know, the left wing blogosphere, as it's determined by whomever, the average Joe who's out there, or Jane who's out there blogging, is pretty damn smart.
And the commenters.
Yeah. Right.
Are pretty damn smart too.
And yet our candidates either don't want to or haven't noticed that we want, you know, we want red meat. You know, we want flesh on the bones. We're not concerned with how many kittens you own.
Right. As I say, they are in the thrall to these political consultants, many of whom lose election after election after election.
Bob Schrum comes to mind.
Yes, he does.
Professional loser.
And but for some reason, those are the people that they still go to. It takes time for people to change their view on anything. It takes effort and time. You know, you have to really be thinking and saying, I think this particular way, there's evidence against. Hey, you know what? There's an awful lot of evidence against this way I'm thinking. Maybe I need to change my view on this. And but you have to be open to those, to noticing those exceptions and things like that. And part of the process of being a citizen is that you have to, first of all, you have to be skeptical no matter where you hear it from. And you have to be able to tolerate a certain amount of uncertainty because, you know, it's the authoritarians, the right wingers, the real dyed in the wool right wingers, both religious and political, who have to believe that there is certainty, and that, you know, what they believe is certain, and what you believe is bad and evil and whatever. And but that's not a healthy condition. That is the road to cracking up.
Yeah, well, it truly is. Let me ask you then, based on what you've observed, do you have any sense of who the, and I ask this primarily because I'm curious. I'm one of those people who believes in studying the enemy more than you study yourself. Do you have a sense for or a guess as for who we're going to wind up with for a Republican nominee?
No, I really don't know enough about their situation or their process to have a good feel for what's going to happen there. I know which ones I'd prefer and which ones I wouldn't prefer, just based on the head-to-head matchups that we've seen in some of the polling around the country. McCain would be the toughest opponent for any Democrat that we now have in the race, and so
because he occasionally passes for normal.
Well, a lot of people think he passes for normal. So. You know, it's not reality that we're dealing with here. It's
no
perception.
So, I mean, I ask you that because I think I recall in some of your conversations with Joe, you remarking that you too are a born Southerner.
Yes, I am. Louisiana, Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Yeah, you're a Louisianan. I'm an Alabamian, and we've had a lot of conversations on this program in the last couple of weeks, manifesting a real and profound fear of what I like to refer to as radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee.
Oh, God.
Well, I mean,
that man scares me.
Yeah, he does. And it's the reason he scares me, and I mentioned you being a Southerner as sort of a lead into this, the reason he scares me is because I grew up with a lot of those people, and I can see them in my little tiny mind's eye, going to the polls and saying, you know, he's a Christian man. Mm-hmm. We need a Christian in the White House who will return America to God. and
well, I have to claim a bit of a distance from that because I grew up in South Louisiana, which is very Catholic.
True.
And but those types were just somewhat north of us.
But he's addressing issues that are going to speak well to the. Hardcore anti-choice Catholic crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. True. But there wasn't that in those days when I was growing up. There was nobody demonstrated against abortion. Nobody you know,
well, Roe v. Wade hadn't happened yet, had it?
Well, it had. Yeah, when I was in college was when, somewhat out of college when Roe v. Wade was passed. But there wasn't this. I hate to use the word polarization, but that is basically what it was. It's, you know, there was racism. You know, absolutely no question about that. But these people hadn't coalesced. They hadn't thought of themselves as a political force. The ones that apparently disagreed all that time. You know, with
well, Roe v. Wade was a godsend to the right wing, wasn't it?
In a way, I guess. But if it hadn't been that, it would have been something else. They're very adept at picking hot button issues. That was all of that appeal to racist and otherwise right wing Southerners. That started with Nixon.
You know, sure, the so-called Southern strategy that he basically bogarted right off of George Wallace.
Absolutely. And, you know, I used to wonder growing up, I used to say, well, gee, what are these white conservatives doing in the Democratic Party? Because they were always holding up stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're saying, wait, we're trying to get the stuff passed. All these damn Democrats are getting in the way, these Dixiecrats. Get them out of there. Make them join the Republican Party. Well, they did.
Yes, they did. In droves.
In droves.
And as I do remember, you know, before there was Roe v. Wade, the signature right wing threatened white America issue, among others that they latched onto. I remember fervent preaching in the Baptist church where I grew up about how they'd taken God out of the schools and prayer in schools was the Roe v. Wade of the late 60s.
Uh-huh.
So that there's always something for the something. It's always a division issue, isn't it, Kara?
Yes.
There's always something that the right wing latches onto as an attempt to divide us from ourselves. And I guess the question
divide them from us. They want to be separate from us. They want to be better than us. I hate to say, and we cannot ever establish a dialogue unless both sides are willing to say, okay, I think you're honorable. I think you're dealing from a position of that you really believe, but you have to give me that same consideration. You can't, I mean, when we were...
Well, we're very good at the front end of that, Caro. They're not so good at the, you know, we're good at extending the olive branch, and they're very good at sending us back with a bloody stump.
That's right. Whipping us with it. That's right. Well, I realized what a serious situation it was when we were planning a high school reunion a few years ago, and I won't tell you how many.
And I won't ask because I'm a gentleman.
And I was corresponding with one of my classmates and saying, you know, you really need to visit my website and blah, and blah, and blah, and blah. And finally he wrote back, he says, you know, I really just can't discuss any of this because you're a baby killer.
Nice.
So how can you do
that? Yeah, out there, Carolyn Kay, every day with a machete, killing babies.
Killing babies. So how do you deal with that? I mean...
And that's what makes me wonder if the division is permanent.
Well, certainly with some people it will be, but I, you know, in growing up, I remember the John Birch Society. I remember how you know everybody thought they were so crazy and right wing and everything. Well, they ended up taking over the Republican Party.
4 o'clock every afternoon, as I was a teenager, the John Birch Report would run on the little station in my hometown, and I always remember the signature line: "This is Ellen Stang. Think about it." And, you know, and I mean, these people were so far out there that they were accusing, you know, Nixon of being a communist.
Well, but see, those people now are in charge of the Republican Party. Those same people with that same mindset and that warrior-like mentality and you know, this is God's war. Well, some of them think it's God's war. Others think it's a war for the good of the economy and stuff. So let's, you know, let poor people die.
Well, it's just like World War II. I've been paying attention. It's just like World War II, Carolyn, it's Islamo-fascism. And we fought fascism in the Second World War, and we're fighting fascism now, so it's the same thing.
Yeah, very.
And Hitler was a liberal, according to Jonah Goldberg. It was the darndest when I saw, and I've mentioned this a couple of times the last couple of nights on the program, when I saw his new book with that blood red cover and that yellow Walmart smiley face with a Hitler mustache on it, I'd about dropped over.
Liberal fascism. Well, the man doesn't even know the definition of fascism, obviously. I remember early on in my endeavors into the political world, back in 2000, it was before they had, it was before blogs and all of that, but there were message boards. The New York Times message board was one of the big ones where you would try to, I thought the purpose would be to try to develop understandings of situations and whatever, but that wasn't the way it was.
No.
With all these right-wingers. And the first time somebody threw at me that Hitler was a liberal, I went, what? And they said, yeah, National Socialist Party. Oh, because the word socialist is there. He's got to be a socialist, liberal, pinko, please.
Free health care for all and, you know, invade Poland.
I said, you don't understand. I mean, Hitler was about the merger of corporate and government power.
Centralized.
All the power,
yeah,
in just a few hands. Plutocracy. And if that's called, if you call that socialism, then we can just turn the world upside down, but that is not socialism.
No, it's not, but we've seen, and I've heard that too. I mentioned a couple of nights ago, I heard that coming at me on the radio, you know, in a small southern West Virginia market, that Hitler was Hitler was a liberal, Hitler was a socialist, you know. Yeah, you want socialism, you want to be like Hitler.
Doesn't matter that they went out and they killed communists and
no, and Hitler standing in front of the smoking rubble of the Reichstag declaring Das ist die Arbeit von Kommunisten. Yeah, no, that's blame it on the commies.
Just recently, by the way, they just recently absolved that guy that was convicted of starting the Reichstag fire. He's dead, of course, but they killed him. But they just recently absolved him, the German
government. I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Well, so, but where does this stuff come from, Carolyn? I mean, if I hear it from a guy in southern West Virginia and you see it on a message board on the New York Times 8 years ago, this stuff is being generated somewhere.
Well, I don't know if there's one central location. I think there are probably a number of them. You may be aware of the fact that that a lot of the organizations and think tanks, I call them stink tanks, that have been set up on the right, including a lot of their media efforts and so on, were started by a memorandum that was written by Lewis Powell, who later became a Supreme Court justice in 1971, just before he became a justice. He wrote this. He was concerned because of, you know, Goldwater's resounding defeat and a lot of the turmoil in the streets because kids didn't want to go to Vietnam. I'm not going to go fight this crazy war over there, and I don't blame them at all. And so he thought, oh my God, he and a lot of other, conservative people thought the whole country was just falling apart and, capitalism was going to die because there were all these crazed leftist communists out there trying to overturn the government or whatever they thought. So he wrote a memo to the Chamber of Commerce, a multi-page memo. It's available on the Internet, and I can send you a link if you like.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Okay. And it was basically a blueprint for how to change the way people think about capitalism, and so, which turned out, to be a greed is good philosophy and whatever. And it was basically followed to the letter. I mean, there were big, wealthy right-wing families that didn't want to pay taxes, but they were willing to fund these organizations instead, the anti-tax organizations and the the ones that spew out all the mishmash of research that, in fact, one of the things that I ran across in 2000 was I was reading along something and I ran across the term conservative scholar and I went, whoa! Wait a minute! I never heard of this. I never heard of a scholar being conservative or liberal. I thought a scholar went after the answers based on facts and, you know, whatever research.
Truth, knowledge, facts, beauty. Yeah, no.
Well, not anymore.
Well, and that gets manifested.
Scholar, your job is to come up with conservative answers to whatever the situation is. And there are people being funded, the Amundsen family, the Coors family, the Koch family, the Bradley family, the Scaife family, all these families that have had all this money to spend, instead of putting it into good things like the Rockefellers did and like Bill Gates is doing and Warren Buffett and so even Paris Hilton's daddy is giving his money away to charity. But instead of putting it to productive uses, they put it to the use of making everybody believe that greed is good and that if everybody just stomps all over everybody else, that's the best way for a society to run. And you may have noticed that one of the things I ran today is some of the consequences of that kind of philosophy.
I wanted to get around to that because that is stunning information.
The consequences are that people are poorer, that they have more difficulties in life, more murders are committed, more suicides are committed in those kinds of environments. And that's not an accident. We human beings are not geared to that philosophy. We are social beings. We became human beings in groups. We call it a tribe, call it whatever you want to, whatever they call it for the monkeys, but it predates our species even that we had to live together. We had to figure out ways to get along with each other.
Well, we don't have the physical tools as humans or proto humans to exist in a lonesome state. We don't have big, long, sharp claws. We don't have sharp, nasty teeth. All we've got is bipedalism and a larger than average brain. But that brain doesn't work as well when it's doing all of its own thinking. We process as a group.
Right.
And so this idea of, it's like these conservatives, Carolyn, have never even bothered to study any basic anthropology or sociology or anything.
No,
because rugged individualism.
No, see, they start from a predetermined result. And then if they do anything, going back or doing any research or whatever, the only research they consider are the ones that either support that predetermined conclusion or can be twisted to pretend that it supports that predetermined conclusion.
And so all of this, you know, winds up giving rise to people like the David Horowitzes of the world.
The Jonah Goldbergs.
Yeah, but Horowitz terrifies me because he wants a conservative mathematics department and a conservative economics department and a conservative art department. And he wants 2.2 to be 4.9 instead, or 2 plus 2 to be 3.9 instead of 4 because 3.9 is more conservative than 4. And, you know, that's the doom of America's future.
They have made great inroads in dooming America's future. Did you read Collapse by Jared Diamond?
I'm in the middle of it right now, as a matter of fact.
It's a big, long book. But I had read some of his earlier books. And
well, I did Guns, Germs, and Steel right before that.
And then I had read the Third Chimpanzee. Years ago, that was one of his first ones, but the idea that we can become so enmeshed in ideology and taboos and things that we think we have to do and we have to do it this way that we will wipe ourselves out. We will die. Because I like to think of the example he gave of the first colony on either Greenland or Iceland, from the Scandinavian countries, and they it was against their culture to eat fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so they tried to put cattle on this island that didn't support cattle, and because they would not touch a fish, they would not put fish in their mouths, they died. That's how crazy people are.
Amazing. And this is the same culture that a few centuries later brings us lutefisk.
Brings us?
Lutefisk. Cods pickled in lye.
Oh,
some of the most vile stuff. Oh, my God, I tried it once. And, you know, once, never again.
I don't know if this was a particular group, but, yeah, no, typically Norwegians do eat fish, you know, so it was kind of a surprise to find out about this particular group. But, I mean, doesn't common sense ever get involved? Apparently
No, it doesn't. I think here in the early, I remember being a slightly younger man, Caro, and thinking that we might be on the verge of a golden age. When the Soviet Union fell and there was talk of a peace dividend, and I still had some optimism left and some idealism, I thought we were on the brink of a golden age.
We certainly had that opportunity.
And even when Bill Clinton left office and there was a surplus, we had a chance to shore up our future.
Yes.
And this is the troubling thing. This is the thing that sometimes makes it difficult to crawl in here behind the microphone every night, is looking at America and realizing that every time we get a chance to go forward, we seem to take two steps back.
Well, it certainly is discouraging, because I've been around for quite a few years now, and it does seem to just keep going on and on. But you know, I just have to keep plugging. I don't know.
Oh yeah, you can't just crawl into the warm bath with the single-sided razor blade and have done with it.
Not I, anyway.
Because I mean, somebody has to be around for history to look at and say, well, they were right, but everybody else was stupid.
Well, you know, I think that I really should have been named Cassandra, you know, the goddess that had the gift of foretelling the future,
and the curse that no one would ever believe her. Exactly.
That's
surprising. You'll have to have a conversation. Yeah, you'll have to have a conversation with Agnes someday, because she swears her middle name's Cassandra.
Okay. In 1982, I told my boss at the time, I said, you know, pretty soon there's going to be a PC on every desk here. And he said, oh, no, that's never going to happen.
Nah.
I don't even know how to type. And they're way too expensive and blah, blah, and blah. 2 years later, as he said to me, that pretty soon we're going to have a PC on every desk around here. Is there an echo in here?
I know, but right. It's, but you know, no credit. You know, it,
I know. Oh yeah.
And that's the way it is. You know, if you're William Crystal, you can, as you mentioned earlier, be wrong 99.9999% of the time.
And wrong.
And make millions of dollars a day on it. On the other hand, if you're right all the time, not so much.
They don't want to hear you. Nobody knows you.
Now, that reminds me of something, because I saw an essay you wrote not too long back toward a progressive media, or toward a new theory of progressive media.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, what you're doing and a lot of the websites that you mentioned are doing, what we're doing here at The Horn, is a part of that.
Yes.
But based on what you said with the way that following the Powell memo, which I had heard of but I have never read and I'm looking forward to, the right wing responded to that by coming together and by busting their rear ends to take over the media by screaming liberal bias for 20 years until the media were finally scared into becoming the conservative media that they are. The question is, one, do we have any of those rich liberal families that would be the sort of polar opposite of the rich conservative families who made all of this happen? And two, if we do have them, Caro, what does it take to get them to get their attention?
You hit the nail on the head. Yes, we do have rich liberal families and individuals, and they too, unfortunately, they are in the thrall of the very same political consultants that are advised the top echelons of the Democratic Party. And those people have their control on the way things go and the way things are run, and they don't want anybody sticking their nose into the situation. They don't want any money going to anybody that doesn't, you know, follow their approved path of doing things. And unfortunately, a free-for-all media is not part of their agenda. So the other direction that I have tried to go in is to get individuals to understand the need for that, and that is a lonely road as well, because people think, okay, well, you know, on the internet I don't pay for anything. And the experts will tell you that they're not willing to pay for anything. People pay for music, they pay for cable television, they pay for internet access, and so, you know, other things for information and, you know, for getting information, for getting entertainment. But there is no way, I'm told, that people will ever pay for making sure that the news that they get is real.
Well, you know, we've had to move over to a listener contribution model, simply because it was almost like we were driven to it, Carolyn.
Yeah.
And God bless the people who do continue to make the horn happen every day. And this is my little horn tooting segment of our conversation. You realize that the horn produces just maybe an hour or two less live original programming than Air America?
Yeah.
That's mind-blowing when you think about it. And constantly moving to develop it, and all these people doing it for free.
Yeah.
You're not getting rich doing Make Them Accountable, and I don't know anybody that is, you know, although this brings us to that segment of the conversation. On the other hand, if you're willing to work within that model, I guess you can be the Daily Kos. They're getting what? I think I talked to Joe Vecchio the other day, and he keeps an eye on this out of a sort of sense of snide disgust. And he told me that it's gone up to $15,000 an ad on Kos.
Yes, and they get something like 3 million visitors a week. I'm not sure why that is. I mean, it has to do with community. These were the first social networks, so to speak. No, let me take that back. The very first social networking was email lists, listservs, they called them at the time. And then came the message boards. And when I first started Make Them Accountable, I tried to make it a message board. And the right-wingers drove me out of that. Because, I mean, they would come along and they would post filth and post it and post it and post it and post it and post it, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, there weren't the same controls then that there are now. And their objective was to shut down my right to free speech. They didn't want me having that right. They have that right, but I don't have
Yeah, that's
that.
Their right, not yours.
Yes. And how dare you say anything different from what they believe. And so, again, we're talking about people being social beings. And so what Coates came up with, and he actually borrowed it from Jerome Armstrong at Mighty D, which was at one time an astrology website, the software that allowed people to post and other people to comment and all of that. And it sort of grew up after in the frustrations of right after the 2002 election. So he was a little late to the game, but he had a better software idea with participation that allowed this, you know, this social capability. And I think that's the reason why he grew. And as time went on, some very, very good writers would post stuff on his website. So he promoted them to front pagers, you know, and that kind of stuff. So there's some fairly good writing on Daily Kos, at least on the main page. But I really just don't go there too much anymore because there's so much how shall I say it?
Snark.
Pardon?
Snark.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And that's the same reason I don't go to Fire Dog Lake or any of that. I'm interested in discussion of the issues. The blogs that I read the most are Talking Points Memo, as I said, Calculated Risk, Paul Krugman, America Blog I like a lot. And
yeah, that's John Aravosis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
very
some of the
good.
Others that have, you know, reasoned discussion. They have people knowledgeable about certain areas that bring out points of view that you're not going to get in the mainstream media. And so they're going to find things. You know, that's one good thing about the blogosphere. There's so many eyes out there looking for stuff and of course I use all of those to pull it into one daily posting that in my mind helps people see at one glance, follow this all the way down, and you see what's happening in the world today that I need to be concerned about as a citizen of this country.
And, you know, I wonder, I said snark, but the other thing is cult of personality, Carolyn.
Yeah, there's some of that, too.
And I wonder if what we're witnessing, because I've participated in a few discussions here and there about the nature of the medium as opposed to the content. And I wonder if we're seeing a sort of point of diminishing returns where blogging is concerned, simply because I the ones that I do go and look at, with the exception of the smart ones that I've found, and I've got a short list of smart blogs that I go to, what you'll see is an initial post and a one-line response, and a one-line response, and a one-line response, and nobody responding to anybody else. It's a look at me attitude. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of the people who make comments, especially a lot of the commenters on Daily Coast, are, you didn't put a comma after this, blah blah blah, or you didn't follow the rules when you put this paragraph in front of that paragraph. You know, and you go, oh. Isn't the objective to learn something here?
Yeah, no, what was Joe's word for that?
You must follow the rules.
Yeah, I think Joe called those people concern trolls.
Yes.
Oh, golly Moses. But, you know, we've got, it's easy to sit and say, you know, here are the problems, here are the problems, here are the problems. There's a lot that's right with the system, too. And one of the things that I keep telling myself, Caro, is that we just got to stay in the fight.
That's right.
We can't give up and walk away. Surrender is not an option.
That is right.
Because ideologically speaking, the other side will just machine gun us.
That's exactly right. They will completely take over if you don't fight them. And that's what's been so scary about the Democrats, is that they think, we should be accommodations. And one reason why I'm very concerned about Obama, because at least he...
The Ronald Reagan comment went through me like a dose of salt, Kara.
Man, I know. Me too.
Because, you know, he and I are not that far apart in age. And yeah. I was just finishing high school as Ronald Reagan was coming into power. I spent my college years with Ronald Reagan in office. And I remember them very, very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not good times
But you see, he had a privileged upbringing. He has not experienced not as many of the problems as most American-born black people have experienced.
Or white.
Or white, for that matter, yeah, right.
That is very disturbing to me. And these statistics that you mentioned just a few minutes ago, these things are stunning. What a conservative agenda does not only to African Americans, but Americans in general. We've invented this euphemism called food insecurity. We used to call it hunger. But now it's food insecurity. How Orwellian. The number of food insecurity households goes up during conservative presidencies.
Yep.
More families below the poverty line during conservative presidencies.
Yep.
Murder goes up during conservative presidencies.
Yep.
Median household income goes down percentage of families holding any debt is higher during conservative presidencies. And the one that just, you know, sometimes I just put my elbows on the desk and put my little head in my little hands and what a weep. The rate of suicides is higher during conservative presidencies.
Because people cannot live up to this, you're all on your own, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, there's nobody here to help you mentality.
Yeah, because it's like, why can't you pull yourself up by your own boots? Because you took my damn boots.
That's right. You took my boots and the straps.
And that's, you know, that's hard. I mean, that little list right there, Carolyn. That little list.
And this is a partial list. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
Visit Conservative Truth. It's a great website. Great resource.
That should be enough to motivate anybody out there who wants to see America do better.
Only if they believe it, you see. That's the problem, is that the right-wingers, I should say, true conservatives, principled conservatives, like John Dean and Kevin Phillips and some of those folks, have seen past the curtain. You know, they've had their toto moment, and the curtain has been pulled away.
But you call those people principled conservatives. Are they conservatives anymore? I mean, isn't that their road to Damascus moment?
Depending on your definition, you see, I stopped calling the crazed people that I have had to deal with having a website. I stopped calling them conservatives long ago because they're not. They're reactionaries. They are right wingers, but they are not conservatives.
Well, no, they're not. Well, you could argue that if there's any conservatives right now, it's people like you and me, because I don't get off on the idea of every single American being in the whole 50 large to Uncle Sam because of this stupid war.
Yeah.
I don't think it's conservative when somebody like Willard Romney stands up in Michigan and says, you know, we need to build more SUVs. We need to lower the fuel economy standards.
Here's the point that I try to make, is that when these right wingers write to me, you're just a socialist. First time somebody called me a communist, I went, oh my lord, they can't be talking about me. I voted for Goldwater in my first presidential election. And
you and Hillary.
Pardon?
You and Hillary.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little older than Hillary, so now you do know my age. What I want for my country is what 60 to 80% of Americans want. That makes me a centrist. And these other people are far right-wing that don't want that. They're way out there on a limb. So why do I have to be called a leftist, or even called, it's not even right to call me a center left. I am a center. I want what most of us want.
And we've talked about that a lot as well too, Caro. If I'm a leftist, it's only because the left has been moved to the right.
Exactly.
And the right is off the scale.
Exactly the objective of these funding families, as I call them, that started all these organizations and think tanks and media outlets, and you know, paying people tons and tons of money to come up with the slickest ways of persuading people that poison is good for you and tastes like chocolate, and
black is white, up is down, left is right,
right.
Wet is dry.
Yes.
Oh, I know. Kara, I tell you what, this has been a wonderful conversation. We've done this for an hour, and I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Great. How about next week?
I think we should.
Okay.
All right. I'll be here. You be there, okay?
I will be.
All right. Carolyn Kay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have
Bob.
A great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye. Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. Drop by, have a look. I get the condensed version in my email, and I wander by and have a little sort of a power browse every day. She does a wonderful, wonderful job of pulling together things that don't look like they're connected on their face. But if you sit there and look at it long enough, I'm not talking about going insane like, you know, A Beautiful Mind or anything, where, you know, you're getting messages in the highlights for children or anything. But you can if you go to something like MakeThemAccountable.com every day, you begin to see kind of like the sun rising and striking the dew on a spider web. You begin to see that there are interconnections, and these things do go from one point to another. Really and for true. So, I think you will be well rewarded if you will make them accountable.com a part of your day. So we're going to take a little break. We'll come back and go to, you know, some more front porch based approach. Yeah, there we go. Sorry, I'm doing six different things at once. If I had a producer, I wouldn't be sitting here with these pauses. You could drive a damn truck through. That's not me griping at Agnes or anything. Don't worry. I'm not being mean to Agnes. It's just, you know, some of these things are harder to do without a producer than they would be otherwise. Yeah, see, I love how this works. I'm sitting here explaining that I've got pauses I can drive a truck through because I'm looking for stuff and doing three things at one time, and she comes sneaking up behind me. Honest to God, it's like stalking or something. Well, at any rate, I'm going to have to take a break now so that she can, you know, whip me with that iron skillet she's got in her hand. We'll be back. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
That was certainly a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to more of them Friday evenings about 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll do sort of a weekly roundup, weekly review with Carolyn Kay from MakeThemAccountable.com. Hope you enjoy them as much as I do. And another great conversation on the way, a voice we haven't heard in a while, and I feel the poorer for when we don't. Our good friend Andy is calling in from the UK. Andy, good morning to you, sir.
Oh, shut up, Bob. You made me all embarrassed.
Oh, heck no. That's not possible, is it?
No, not really. I don't think I've been embarrassed since about 13, actually.
No, well, see.
But we won't go into that. No. I haven't been on online for a while, and when I have been online, you haven't been.
I know. We've had some weirdness here and there, but...
It's the nature of the interwebs, you know, how that works.
Yes.
Wicked. Well, no, I was inspired to call I was going to call anyway, but I was inspired to call particularly that conversation you were having with that lady. What was her name?
Carolyn Kay.
Carolyn Kay, right, yeah. Too many names of too many different people that I should know all of, you know, how that goes. It was very interesting. I quite enjoyed that. I would like to point out that there was one bit I disagreed with quite intensely.
All right.
And that was when you were talking about, what about the rich liberals who are on our side? And there's kind of a problem with that.
There ain't none?
Well, if they're rich enough to be classed as one of the super rich, then they can't be a liberal. Even if they pretend it, that they're not really. And if they're like, I don't know, Tim Robbins rich, then, well, they're rich, but they're not members of the ruling class. They're just upper middle class, aren't they?
In other words, they've found a way to the money, but they don't have the connections?
Yeah, yeah. And they're not going to get the connections because they've made a few too many statements at the wrong side of things. You know what I mean?
The other side of that stick for me, Andy, is I don't need their connections. To build a liberal media, we need their money.
Well, no, that's the thing. I mean, there's a problem, especially in America, with liberals who've been successful since Reagan, so they think you don't have to give. Whereas conservatives, well, let's stop calling them conservatives, the right wing,
yeah.
They know full well you have to invest in the message. Goebbels proved that one more most recently and most famously, but Rush Limbaugh's doing a damn good job of trying to beat him at it. So, you know, they know you've got to pay for the message. Liberals, they're not so keen on that. You know, I don't know, it might affect how many times they get their dog's hair washed or something.
I know. And that's incredibly frustrating to me because I don't...
Look to the workers, man. That's where you got to go.
You know, listen, Andy, that's the problem. For the most part, our workers don't get it either. Okay?
Well,
or our workers' leadership doesn't get it. We started this network on a very generous offer to purchase advertising for a year from a labor organization, and we went thereafter from door to door to door, and it's not anything to do with how we do or what we do, it's that they don't get the necessity of doing.
No, that's partly it, and also from the strict advertising standpoint, most companies still don't understand web advertising. I mean, that's why Coast gets paid so much for adverts that probably make no returns for their investment.
Well, I remember having Joe Bagent on this program and him telling us about, when his book came out. What was it? Deer Hunting with Jesus, something like that.
Right.
When they bought an ad on Coast,
mm.
and the ad yielded two book purchases.
And one of them
was from his publisher, and that's an ad that was $9,000 or $10,000 at the time.
Yeah. Well, I'm not surprised, and the reason for that is because what is advertised on the web is generally stuff that people who are using those websites are just not going to buy. Do you know what I mean? Just go to Yahoo and look at the adverts they've got up there. I mean, if they're not an advert for a university, which feasibly could be sold to anyone, then they're adverts for banking stuff. And nobody's going to buy banking stuff online anymore. Nobody has any money. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that does slow things down a bit, doesn't it?
Well, yes, yes. But, you know, it's all part of the plan, isn't it? The whole subprime thing was to allow the ruling class banking institutions to take control of all the mortgage banks.
You know, I was thinking of a lot of the things that you say about the banking interests not too long back, Andy, when I had that story, and I don't know if you saw it or not, but about the Christmas bonus of the guy who runs Goldman Sachs.
Oh, yeah.
Guy got a $60 million Christmas bonus, and he lost money all year long.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But that's nothing. Here, a guy left. Oh, what bank was it? I can't remember. They managed to lose, like, hundreds of billions or something somehow a few years ago, and he got a $260 million parachute. Golden parachute. We call it a golden handshake over here, but a golden parachute.
That's like a half a billion dollars.
Yeah.
Damn.
Crazy, isn't it? But this is the thing. I mean, it is crazy to us, but it's not crazy to them, because it's about keeping the money out of the hands of the workers, and they consider shareholders workers, you know, for them. They're the Muppets that are stupid enough to keep the whole system.
Well, okay, there's another topic, the shareholders. Don't the shareholders ever? You would think that they would look at these salaries and go, you know, that could have been a little bit more on our quarterly dividend.
Yeah, I'm sure every individual shareholder an individual thinks that, but of course the shares aren't managed by the individual. All they can do is buy or sell. You know, unless you own loads of shares in a company, you don't get to even speak at the annual general meeting. You're allowed to turn up if you own one, but you're not allowed to speak unless you own a lot. You know, and so. It doesn't matter what they think. It's managed by stockbrokers and hedge fund managers and all these wonderful mystical wizards of the financial industry that are basically pulling, well, you know, numbers and words out of their rear ends and telling us that this is how finance works.
And, of course, there's a lot of bearing to be had in the Supreme Court decision. I think I talked about it on Tuesday, where the Alito, Roberts, Scalia, Thomas, Kennedy cabal declared that shareholders who wanted to sue the company in which they owned stock could go pound sand for all they cared.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem for them there is that all of these companies are now international, so all their shareholders have to do is come to the European Court. And, you know, how many times American companies win in the European Court? Not often.
That's true.
How much do Microsoft owe now?
Good bit.
Millions of euros, isn't it?
Yeah,
it started out at hundreds of millions of euros, and they said, we're not paying, and the European Court said, okay.
Now it's a billion.
Yeah, now it's doubled. Carry on, and we'll keep going. You know, I mean, what can you do? You live in a system that has been, I mean, I'd argue set up from the very beginning to serve the interests of the ruling class. You guys might not argue from the very beginning. I would say it has been, and I would say that it's had a couple of moments of social reform. By that great right-wing crazy that created the New Deal. What was his name?
Yeah, FDR.
And, you know, people accuse him of being a leftist or a liberal. He was about as liberal as Ann Coulter. I don't know. He was a right-wing crazy, but he was a sane right-wing crazy in as much as he knew.
Well, while the rest of his class did not understand it, he understood that he was saving its bacon.
Yeah. I mean, if he hadn't done that, America would not be a capitalist state today. I mean, arguably, Prescott Bush et al. And all of those would have ended up against the wall when the revolution came. You know? Or they'd have ended up running South America or something.
Now stop telling me stories just to make me feel better, Andy.
Well, we're allowed to talk about what ifs, aren't we?
We certainly are.
Yes.
And, the vision of Prescott Bush hanging by his heels. It's a sweet one, I got to tell you.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, I mean, another thing that inspired me to call...
But then again, you know, you can have a fantasy vision of Prescott Bush hanging by his heels just for what he did in dealing with the Nazis. I mean, you know, that was treason, after all.
He barely escaped being shot for treason, yeah, didn't he? I mean, it was kind of like, should we give him a trial or should we just shoot him, was the decision, I think.
But the thing is, they figured out if they shot him, they'd have to shoot the CEO of IBM and Ford.
Well, they'd have to shoot the entire ruling class of the United States of America, because they found out all of them were in on it. You know, I mean, yours is not a country without a little blood on its hands, you know what I mean? And none of the corporations that exist that are the problem, the big corporations, they've all got plenty of blood on their hands. You know, the system that has created the American dream and all those, I don't know, that whole, I keep thinking 80s films with Michael J. Fox and stuff like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Secret of My Success.
Yeah, and I don't know, just all those other New York-based films where it's all high towers and all looking out of windows and big hairdos and shoulder pads and stuff. Just that
Working girl, Melanie Griffith. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That was possible because of the blood and the sacrifice of the rest of the world. You know what I mean? And Americans just don't get it. You just don't get it. And the reason you don't get it is because you're not told. Anyway, you know, you're constantly constantly given all this, like, you know...
Look over there. There's Paris Hilton.
Yeah, you know, look, there's Paris Hilton, there's Britney Spears. Oh, look, we get to blow up another country. Oh, okay, that's got boring. Let's move back on to Paris Hilton. You know, that's what you fed. And, of course, that's why Carolyn and yourself and others are so important, where you have actual discussions. This is why the horn's so important. That's why, yeah, blogs where you can leave a comment and the wingnuts can be edited out so you can actually hold a discussion, you know. And as long as nobody's foul or vile, it doesn't matter what your views are, you discuss. That's what's important.
It's finding that discussion that seems like it's becoming increasingly difficult, Andy.
It is. Well, I mean, because, you know, the major news media recognize the threat. I mean, you can't interact with the major news media. I mean, even with the BBC, the BBC you can get through to someone, yeah? I mean, if you're phoning some of the individual shows, you can find phone numbers to get directly through to the show. But if you call the BBC, you'll end up with a fielder, and they'll just field your call and say, yes, we'll pass that one on up. And, you know, they won't.
Yep, rolled into a little ball, into the garbage can.
Yeah, if they've even bothered writing anything down, you know. I'm sure they typed something up and they just hit delete. But it must be even worse in the States with Fox News and even MSNBC. You know, they don't want to hear any comments about how war's bad. Do you make a lot of money from making bombs?
Well, sure they are. And, of course, you know, we saw... We saw that in action with Dennis Kucinich at the Nevada debate, and
exactly.
It took a couple of days for it to shake out, Andy. But you know, that is the beauty of the internet and the blogosphere. Eventually, it will shake out. And that I saw a headline today was: are you familiar with Yucca Mountain, Andy?
What, the place or?
Well, Yucca Mountain is outside Vegas in Nevada.
Yeah, didn't they? Isn't it a semi-active volcano they wanted to put nuclear waste in?
Yeah, that's basically how it shakes out, yes.
Yeah,
it's, you know, earthquake fault zone, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Real, you know, real height of stupidity kind of thing.
Oh, well, yeah, but, you know...
What shakes out, though, Andy, is that, let's see, John Edwards, when he was in the Senate, voted in favor of Yucca Mountain, but he's now against it. Hillary Clinton is still voting in favor of Yucca Mountain funding, and Barack Obama votes in favor of Yucca Mountain and takes money from backers of Yucca Mountain in political donations. So the only Yucca Mountain is big to Nevada voters, and it's a big you know, we want no part of it. The only person who could have been on that stage. Who was consistently opposed to Yucca Mountain, who voted against it from the first time forward, was Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah.
So, naturally, he can't have part of that discussion.
Well, no, of course not. I mean, you know, to be fair to Edwards, he probably voted for it not knowing what the hell it was, because that's what most of the senators vote on. You know, you don't know what the hell it is. They give you a 10,000-page document and say, read this by 15 minutes past this hour. You know, get in there and vote on it. And so you have to take their word for it. So to be fair to Edwards, yeah, I'm not surprised. I'd be more surprised if he hasn't done that on several things, like voted for something, then found out.
Well, I'm pleased that he's against it now.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's willing to come out and say he's changed his position means he's a better politician than either of the other two. But then Barack Obama is openly a right-wing, he's openly a tool of the right-wing class. You know, he's the ruling class's puppet, same as Hillary. I mean, come on, look, Hillary, yeah? Here's the clue. Chairwoman of the Young Republican Party in her university. There's the clue. Okay? She's been a plant the whole time. You know, just like Tony Blair was in the Labour Party over here. Okay? Right winger in university suddenly has a evangelical moment.
What was that again, Andy? How does that work?
Well, it's just down and and suddenly you're a liberal.
I've got this vision of little flapping Terry Gilliam wings with it, you know.
Oh, that for an American, that guy's got such a British sense of visual humor.
Yeah.
It's really bizarre. But no, that was just completely a side point. But no, I mean, you know, the problems we face are legion, as they say. But ultimately it always comes down to waking people up to their class interest, because that's what it's all about. It's always, and it always has been about class interest. And, you know, I mean...
But how do you do that without... let's go back to a Monty Python moment again, Andy.
Yeah.
You remember in Monty Python and the Holy Grail,
mm-hmm.
when Dennis and the rest of the anarcho-syndicalist commune are down, you know, just heaping mud into a cart, and Arthur comes riding up,
yeah.
and he explains, you know, who is your lord? We don't have a lord. We take it in turn to act as a sort of executive office for the week, but all the that part.
Yeah, yeah.
And at one point he says, the ruling class, and I think it's Terry Jones, who plays the really high-voiced,
yeah.
He's playing the woman, and she goes, oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's exactly
and,
right.
And that's, and that really is the trick, Andy,
is to
wake up people to class issues without telling them that they're dealing with class issues, because the minute the word class comes out of your mouth, the entire collective right wing screams out, oh, there you go, bringing class into it again. It's class warfare. And you're done.
Well, there's two ways of approaching it. There's it depends who you're talking to. If you're talking to a true conservative, then you approach it in open, total honesty, and you say, yeah, damn right, it's class warfare. It's us or them, buddy, and you're one of us, and they're them, okay? And they'll understand that, because if you're talking to a true conservative. And then if you're talking to somebody who is easily led, then you have to be a little bit more subtle. You have to appeal to emotion, and you have to leave class, the word class, out of it entirely.
It used to be that you could talk. It used to be you could talk in those terms with the labor movement.
Mm.
I don't know if you can anymore.
Well, the labor movement in America is a horribly corrupted, bastardized group of fascists. There are nice labor movements, and there are unions out there that do the true thing. But the big ones are completely corrupted, as far as I can tell, because they don't do anything like fighting for the people. You know, I mean, the labor movement should be more vocal, because the labor movement have a right to be in politics, and the religion movement don't. So the fact that, you know...
Well, I mean, you know that my heart lies with organized labor.
Yeah.
And as a consequence of that, that's a bitter pill to swallow, Andy.
It is. It's nasty. But, you know, they always...
Because I got people in my family who died, or, you know, fought, bled, you know, as part of the labor movement.
Yeah, well...
And to realize that, but the thing is, it's hard to get away from the fact that there are a bunch of labor unions who are endorsing Hillary Clinton, and why? Back in the early stages of the primary process, I asked a very straightforward question: why isn't every labor union in this country endorsing the only man on the ticket who still has a union card?
Mm-hmm.
That's Dennis Kucinich, and he pays his dues every year. He is still a member of a union.
The reason is because the people who are running the union, the top, are right-wing tools. You know, they're working from the same game plan. No, they're probably not all getting briefed by the same people in the same smoky rooms, but there are briefings going on, and the rooms may well be smoky, and the message filters down to the working enablers. You know, I mean, most of the people that do the work for the ruling class that keeps the working class in you know, poverty, are working class. They're not ruling class people. The ruling class do not want to get off their asses for anything, even to run sometimes when it all goes wrong, okay? The ruling class literally will just sit there and want everything fed to them. They have a system that's been established for 10 to 12,000 years now. It's worked for them so far, with a few minor hiccups here and there. You know, I mean, the last great populist, what was that guy's name? Oh, yeah, that was it. Julius Caesar. And I do mean that, the last great populist. And he was a member of the ruling class. Since then, we've had no proper ruling class populist. They've all decided to stick with the ruling class oligarchs and oppressive side of things. Because they think the people might get uppity if you give them anything. They thought that when Caesar took over. And it's been the playbook for the last 2,000 years. Don't let the people have anything, they'll get uppity. I mean, the only reason Europe got any development after the Second World War is because the ruling class were broke and they couldn't do anything about it. They weren't able to stop it until the 1970s.
And that was enough time for change to be enacted and the social structure to be altered at least a little bit.
Yeah, you know, we've got healthcare over here. I mean, you know, and there are areas of the world where this class war model doesn't apply. I mean, go to the Scandinavian countries. It's a totally different kettle of fish. You know, there's left and right over there, but nobody on the right wing in Norway wants to get rid of the National Health Service or privatise the roads or bridges or, you know, stop regulation on cars or anything like that. That's insane. That's Americanism. Do you know what I mean? Same in Sweden, same in Finland. Incredibly socialist countries. But Britain has been horribly infected by Americanism, probably because we speak the same language.
Or almost.
Well, yeah, you guys have stuffed it up and made it more complicated. I mean, what is wrong with you? A faucet is a tap, okay? Why do you have to add letters? An elevator...
I call it a tap. Hey, no. I'm not responsible for that one. It's a tap to me, too.
Good. But the elevator...
Or a spigot.
No, well, that's adding letters as well. What's wrong with that? Just make it simple, dude. Come on, seriously. But yeah, no, apart from language, just minor language flaws aside.
But no, I was talking with John Fox the other night on the Horn section about it, though, Andy, and it's true with Great Britain, it's true with Australia. Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, the nation closest to us of similar comparison, Canada, they seem somehow immune to it to a certain extent, although they've got a little bit of a right-winger in their government. Nobody wants to take apart the Canadian health service.
Well... Yeah, I mean, Canadians, I think they're possibly immunized by proximity to a degree, do you know what I mean? Because if it's far enough away, the dream of Americanism can be sold to people if they're connectable. But if it's close enough, then, yeah, I mean, some Canadians just have to look across the lake and look at what? Detroit?
True. Detroit, which is becoming, you know, it's beginning to look like... some sort of site in the middle of the Central American jungle.
Well, I mean, I saw some stuff about, like, some images of Detroit on, yeah, some little documentary on YouTube, and it was just about the Rust Belt and the effects on it, and I'm quite into sociology, as you can probably tell. And, I mean, you know, I've seen computer games where the place looks less deserted, and it's supposed to be a war zone, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, the place looked like it was dead. I mean, the American economy is falling apart, and you're being sold this glamour thing through the media all the time. You know, America's great, America's strong, America's tough. Look at all our planes and missiles. No? Okay. Well, look at Britney Spears. No? Okay. Well,
Paris Hilton, Lindsay Lohan, for God's sakes, look at some.
Yeah, look at the talking dog. If all else fails, you know, a man was in the woods, saw a bear. Ooh, was he scared? A bit. Okay. Another story? You know, they're desperately keeping your...
Forty car pileup on the I-5, and they put it on the national news.
Well, you know, they love that, you know what I mean? Yeah, the worst one is where there's some big accident somewhere, and local news starts reporting on it, because there might be someone from the area involved.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's local news. But it gets picked up by the desperate for content 24-hour news cycle, and is broadcast all around the nation. Now, the funny part about that, though, Andy, is that... they will pick the national, you know, the cable news networks and so forth will pick up these sorts of things and run with them because they feel like they're desperate for something to talk about. When in fact there is there are copious amounts of content to talk about that are economic, health care. I mean, any given story that I'm talking about on this show on any given evening, you know?
I know, but what we're doing again is we're slipping back into thinking the way we think. That is what the whole point of this media is, to not talk about the economy, social issues, health care, the fact that America is number, 43 on out of the top 50 for child mortality and post-birth mother mortality. You know, can't talk about that because that would affect change. And if people affect change, then they're all stuffed, aren't they? I mean, you know, the ruling class, they're lazy and indolent and ignorant to a degree, but they're smart enough to know that they can't let us start making decisions. And so that's why Edwards will be dropped in the next couple of weeks from the various debates, or some story will be cooked up to try and destroy him. That's why Kucinich was dropped. That's why Gravel was dropped. Yeah, it doesn't matter that these guys wouldn't be elected. And my point is that, well, if they were the nominee and enough people didn't vote for the Republicans, they would be elected. So what's that argument all about? But, you know, it doesn't matter. The point of them being there is to add the conscience to the other candidates who would be elected, given the weird and twisted system that you currently have. You know what I mean? I mean, personally, I don't understand this. If you have primaries, why don't you all have every primary on the same day in every state?
Well, there's been a lot of discussion about that in the chat room, Andy. Why not do it all at once?
Well, that's something that can be affected and bypassing the ruling class. They have no say on that. That's, I mean, literally, all you have to do to say to the Democratic Leadership Council, if they say, oh, we're not going to seat your delegates at the thing, is just say, well, you no longer represent us. So get the hell out of our democratically paid for offices. Why don't you bugger off down the road and join your pals down at the Republican National Committee? Because that's all they are. They're Republicans that are running the Democratic Party. Bob Schrum, professional loser. Now, is he just bad at elections, or is he paid by the Republicans even more money to lose them?
Well, you know, the Washington Generals were paid by the Harlem Globetrotters.
Well, yeah.
That might be a little bit too American a reference, but...
No, I know who the Harlem Globetrotters are. What they used to do over here is they'd send them over, and they'd pick, like, just a bunch of tall white guys who'd never even seen a basketball. And they'd have about half an hour to practice, and then the Harlem Globetrotters.
Right, that's the Washington Generals. They were always the Washington Generals.
Ah, right, okay. Yeah, we just know the Harlem Globetrotters would turn up and have to win. That's what we know of American sports teams. They turn up and they have to win. And if we have to use steroids, damn it, to do it, then we will, is the kind of policy, isn't it?
Because, yeah. Well, you know, if it's not worth cheating over, it's not worth doing. That's the American way.
Personally, as far as sports goes, I mean, you know, American football, I played that and got very badly hurt playing that. And, yeah, the steroids, I don't mind. You know, if they want to use steroids and all sides use them, well, fine. You know, they're idiots. They shouldn't do it, but it's up to them. When it comes to international competitions where it's like, you know, everybody has to chase you to catch up, that's where I kind of disagree with drugs in sport. We should have two sets of Olympics. Drug-fueled and non-drug-fueled. See which is more popular. Seriously, you know, I mean, give a sprinter PCP and watch as he just down 100 meters in about 6.5 seconds and then punches straight through the wall at the end and kills himself on a pillar.
And you're right, and dies chewing on a brick.
Yeah. With a big grin plastered across his face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, well, you know, it'd be fun. And hell, that'd mean the ruling class would have one less thing to worry about. The people would all be a little bit more occupied. It'd be even better than America.
That's the one thing I've never figured out, Andy, is why this ruling class, as we talk about it, why they've never gotten around to legalizing something like marijuana.
Well, that comes down to big business, because there's the ruling class want to keep everyone happy unhappy, but controllable. Problem with marijuana is, you can't control the content. People can grow it themselves. You can't add profit like cocaine by processing.
And sometimes people put on Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon and have really weird ideas.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you smoke pot and you think more. You take acid and you think more. You take cocaine, you get violent and aggressive. You take alcohol, you generally get violent and aggressive.
And look where our problems are. Cocaine and booze.
Well, they want them fighting each other. Sexism, racism, all of these things that keep us separated, because the one thing we cannot develop is a class consciousness. Because as soon as we do, they're stuffed. They have to do what the Stalin et al. Managed to achieve, which is hijack the revolution. And, well, the next time a revolution comes, that's not going to happen the same way twice. So we're learning, you know. I don't know. If they don't destroy the world with their pouring depleted uranium into the atmosphere and mercury and heavy metals into the seas.
And dumping spent nuclear fuel down volcanoes. Don't forget that part.
Oh, well, yeah, that's another good one. Have you heard of DARPA?
Yes, oddly enough, I have.
You know what the array is doing?
What?
Well, the array is designed, apparently, this is what they're doing at the moment, is stopping hurricanes hitting the United States Gulf areas with such intensity by creating a standing wave of electromagnetic interference in the Atlantic Ocean. Now, you understand the principles of a dipolar magnet, yeah?
Yeah.
The Earth is a dipolar magnet. A bipolar magnet, but of course, if you're in one half of the hemisphere, it's effectively a dipolar, single polar magnet, yeah?
Right.
The polar magnet. Well, the problem, of course, is they're saying the world acts like a single magnet. So if you create an interference in the field, that's it. It's just an interference in the field. But the Earth isn't actually like that, because as a whole, we have a double magnetic field, the big bubble thing you see on the diagram, and it creates an opposite wave on the far side.
On the other end of the world, sure.
Well, do you know what's exactly opposite the area they say they're affecting in the Atlantic Ocean? The Chinese coast.
Yeah.
China's been suffering an unusually large number of storms and typhoons in the last couple of years along its coast. Just a conspiracy out there for you. You know, they're pumping energy into the atmosphere, dude. They're pumping energy. So we're not only polluting the damn atmosphere, we're adding energy to the atmosphere. okay? And I say we, meaning
we
are running your military and Space Command, which is the new name for the ruling class council, if you know what I mean.
Then, you know, if that's the case, Andy, we don't have much to worry about because we're not going to see the year 2100.
Well, yeah, that's probably it. I mean,
you know, 2100, dawn of the cockroach.
The main thing that I'm holding out for right now is that China's going to sink here. I mean, you know, European banks have now started to fully divest themselves of American dollars. People in Europe are no longer holding the dollar. We're buying Canadian dollars, okay?
Well, why not? It's worth as much.
Well, yeah, and the Canadians will take the American dollar because it gives them cross-border currency that's easy to deal with. Do you know what I mean? They can take the American dollar and hold stocks of it, and when your economy goes completely to pot, they'll have lots of dollars that they can use as leverage to buy things like roads and land and mountains and
people
and so on. So, you know, and I'm just holding out for... It's a horrible thing because I don't want the American people to suffer, but what the hell can I hope for? Do you know what I mean? I don't want the people anywhere to suffer, but the fact is...
Well, and that's, you know, that's the problem. You know, yeah, you're addressing the fundamental problem of revolution, social uprising, all of that, because every time poor folks stand up, they get shot down.
That's why I'm kind of hoping for the economic thing, because it's less likely to kill as many... It'll kill less people. Do you know what I mean? In fact, it might not kill any. It might.
But, you know, I mean, like, well, for instance, the dominant image of the Great Depression in the United States, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
The dominant image is a Wall Street stockbroker standing on a ledge of a high rise in New York getting ready to jump.
Do you know how many Wall Street stockbrokers jump?
None.
No.
One? Two?
Yeah, I heard different numbers, but never more than like three or four or something.
But that image is, I mean, that is the dominant image inside the American mind. If we bother to think about it, when in fact the real effect of the Great Depression was far many more times folks like my grandfather, who were ruined for the rest of their lives out of it, or farmers driven off of their land in, say, you know, the Dust Bowl states. By virtue of, you know, just pernicious, greed-driven agricultural policies.
Yeah.
But we don't think, you know, we don't think about a guy up to his hips in dust. We think about some poor, you know, some poor bedraggled guy from the Monopoly board standing on a ledge that never freaking happened.
Well, no, but it's like always. Another example of that sort of image-making from the ruling class. And you were saying with Carolyn, you didn't know if there were people making these sort of decisions and image, you know, choices and media memes. Yes, there are. Okay? One of the groups is called the World Trade Organization. Do you know who they are, Bob?
Oh, sure.
Made up of? 200 people and people who come to listen to them and do what they say. The people who come to listen and do what they say are the governmental representatives. The 200 people are the top 200 business leaders in the world. That would be one step down from the ruling class, just so everyone could put it on their little pyramid. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And these are the people, they create the memes. You know, you've got to sell a war in 1991, so there were 500 babies thrown onto the cold, cold tiles of Kuwaiti hospitals to die without their incubators. Kuwait only had a population of about 500,000 people. How many bloody incubated babies do they think that is? I mean, London doesn't have 500 incubators.
Damn good point.
It's an emotive lie. Yeah, it's an emotive lie. And
we're in that time frame now. I don't know how many folks in the UK know about the Glaspie memo. I'm sure you do. But the number of people in America who know about the April Glaspie memo, where April Glaspie tells Saddam Hussein that it's okay to invade Kuwait? Well, of course she did, because that created the casus belli, and, you know, boom, game on.
Yeah, pick up the gun. I don't want to pick it up, mister. You'll shoot me.
I
don't want to.
You do this way too well, Andy. You do this way too well.
Well, the voice is.
Yeah.
Well, now, Bob, I've been practicing my southern accent too as well, and I'm not entirely sure I got it quite correct. I think I might be speaking just a little too fast.
You're a little too fast, but I think we could probably insinuate you into South Carolina, and you'd get along all right.
South Carolina? Do I need to put more into things?
Well, no, you just slow it down a little. Make it a little more ponderous.
Ponderous, Bob? You mean I'd have to talk a little more like Drop Dead Fred up there? Is that
right? There you go. Just slow it down.
Tired.
Can't talk too fast because the heart ain't beating too fast neither.
Sorry, it's Stephanie Miller's fucking. She's done it for me, man. The Forrest Gump, I'm pretty tired thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every time Fred Thompson is on, I'm pretty tired. I hate that movie, but that clip is one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
I hate that movie too because I love the book so much.
I didn't even know there was a book.
Oh, if you ever get a chance, I mean, it might be.
I'll look it up.
It might be 4 centimeters thick. It's that small a book.
Right, fair play. That'll take me about 6 hours then.
Yeah, I bought it at a Kroger grocery store the night before I took the entrance exams for law school, way back when the world was young and dinosaurs roamed the still settling continents.
Just after they'd invented the Remington bolt action rifle so you could go and hunt the T-Rex, yeah?
Yeah, and yeah, right. I read that. I was just a neurotic mess getting ready to take the test, didn't sleep a wink that night, and sat there reading that book. And my eyes were just blood red when I went to take the test because I had been laughing so hard that I had been weeping constantly. That book is so much better and so much funnier than the movie ever could have been.
Well, it's always the way with books. Books are always far superior to the movie. I mean, I don't know if you've ever read Dune, but the film Dune just...
I've got them both, yeah. And
yeah, you watched the film?
Oh, yeah. I've got the director's cut. That movie means something to me.
David Lynch.
Dig this. This is an interesting piece of trivia, and people know. From time to time, I mention that one of my favorite pieces of historical fiction is a book by Gary Jennings called Aztec.
Right.
And it is brilliant.
Right.
It's also kinky and just amazing.
It's some of the sci-fi I've been reading. If you're kinky.
But Dino De Laurentiis. Got the option to Aztec, and he had the option to Dune.
Right.
And he had he had the cooperation of the Mexican government, the full cooperation for doing Aztec. They provided that they were willing to provide the entire Mexican army to serve as extras for recreating
the Aztec warriors. We've got 100,000.
Yeah, exactly. But instead, De Laurentiis chose to make Dune in Mexico instead of making Aztec. And Aztec, to this day, has never been turned into a film, and that's a pity.
Yeah, Dune was, and I'd say that's a pity, too. I couldn't stand that film. I always try to read the book first, and the book is good and deep and intense and political, and the film says it's all about a sonic weapon.
And, well, see, for me, the film really reaches its awful nadir when you get Sting in as Fade Rautha, and he screams, "I will kill you!" And because I can tell with the way he's intoning the words, Andy, that they've had to shoot like 19 takes. Say it a different way, Sting. I will kill you. No, that's no good. Take 4. I will kill you. Take 5. I will kill you. Take 6.
Yeah,
and they never got one that was any good.
You just pick one at random. Stuff it. That one will do.
Yeah. Oh, what the hell? We can't stay here all day for Sting. That's enough. That's a wrap.
Film.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. There's very few films that pop stars should be in. Although, if you've seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh gosh, yes.
Right. That is one of the funniest films. I mean, Tyrone. No, that's in Snatch. The Lock, Stock one where is it? I'm losing my train of thought now. Yeah, Sting is the dad in that. The owner of the bar. That's Sting, and that's the first film I've seen him in where he actually plays like an actor would play a character.
Yeah, as opposed to "Hi, I'm Sting, and I'm in a movie."
Yeah, exactly. And to be honest with you, Guy Ritchie managed to achieve 2 really good films there, and then he married Madonna, and it all went horribly wrong.
As well as one might well imagine.
Well, Madonna's been a scary individual throughout my life. I mean, I've had to grow up with Madonna. Reagan can be blamed for that one, too, I think.
Well, for heaven's sake, she's spending $10,000 a month now on blessed Kabbalah water. What do you want? I'm not kidding.
Go away. Just for her to go away.
Open your tap and get a drink, Madonna.
Well, yeah, they did a test in Britain recently. This is the one I loved, because this is, you know, my capitalism is just full of, well, we all know what. They took 20 waters, okay, and blind-tested Londoners just walking through the street. Would you like to take our water test? Just take a sip of all of these and see which one you like best. Just grade them. So it's just a, take a sip and grade it. And they only put 3 tap waters in. And do you want to guess where the 3 tap waters placed?
Yeah, 1, 2, and 3 every time. No, that's another one of those things. Americans don't know that tap water is subjected to far higher purity standards than any of the crap that goes in a bottle.
Yeah, because it looks blue, because it's got the blue tint plastic, it must be good for you.
Well, it wouldn't be.
They used to say the same thing about, oh, it's got newts living in it, therefore it must be fresh. They wouldn't live in anything that wasn't fresh. That one's asking, do the newts get out to go to the toilet?
The late, great W.C. Fields, invited to go swimming in a pond, said, hell no, fish piss in that. Fields is kind of like my... he's achieved almost religious status for me, because if you follow the words of W.C. Fields, you can get through life pretty good, and it's a lot easier than some other religions.
Oh well, hell yeah, most religions demand a certain amount of like thinking in a thinking with of something that is not possible. Don't think W.C. Fields ever asked you to do that.
Basically. Right. Yeah. I mean, he just said, "Hey, look, you can't cheat an honest man. Never give a sucker an even break, and don't smarten up a chump. You can get through life on that, Andy."
Yeah. Yeah. It works. That's pretty much my philosophy. Unfortunately, I came to it on my own, and then everybody accredits him with it just because he came up with it first. Same as Marx, Same as Parenti. I kept getting told, "Oh, you just follow Parenti. Oh, you're a Marxist." It's like, hang on a minute. I just thought all of that up on my own, all that stuff about the police being, like, not neutral agents of social order, and they're like, yeah, Marx said that 100 years ago. It's like, what?
Kind of feel cheated after that, don't you?
Well, yeah, it's like, then when it makes it even more farcical for me when people go, oh, you're a Marxist, and it's like, no, I'm a realist. It just happens to be that Marx was describing reality. I can't help that. It's not my fault, It's all right if you want to be a fantasist and follow the works of, say, Greenspan, Reaganomics, or whatever the hell.
Milton Friedman?
Milton Friedman and Ayn Rand are right up there in people who should never have existed and should have been thinned from the herd.
Oh, not enough. One of these days we're going to get that time machine and we're going to right a lot of wrongs, Andy.
Well, yeah, but the problem, of course, then is that we're thinking individuals and we're going to think, what if we do something wrong? For example, if we remove Ayn Rand, who's to say that somebody in 50 years' time won't come up with a way to explain just how insane Ayn Rand is to everyone, and suddenly the world becomes a socialist paradise? If we remove her, the ruling class could continue for another 12,000 years. See? Travel's not an easy thing to think about, Bob. You can see I've given this some thought.
Yeah, well, I've never known you not to.
Well, Chief O'Brien and not liking temporal mechanics in Deep Space Nine is the reason I decided to start looking at that temporal causality and paradoxes and stuff. And I basically found out that, bugger it, it's all far too complicated. And if you find yourself in a paradox, just do whatever the hell you want, because it could hardly get any worse.
All too true. All too true. Andy, so I trust that, are you back online now?
I have a working connection and a working computer, because they were my two faults, one after the other. Got the connection fixed, and then the computer died, so I had to go and get that sorted out. So now I have a wonderfully huge hard drive, and my fans started making funny noises.
Oh, God. Yeah, I love it when you go, oh, my God, that smells expensive.
Yeah, well, I took the careful step of getting in there with a cotton bud. What do you call them, Q-tips?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Got in there with a cotton bud and spent about 3.5 hours last weekend cleaning all the parts that I could get to in my fan, and then very carefully re-greased it a little bit, and it should last me another 6 months, but then it's probably dead, and I'm going to have to buy a new motherboard and chip and everything. So.
Well, see, we dodged a bullet by a very slim margin. I went on and on for a while about the new computer that we built to run the on-air processes here, because the other one was getting quite persnickety.
Mm-hmm.
And... I spent a weekend getting the old one out and putting this one into service, and lo and behold, like 3 days after, I plugged up the other computer just to do some basic maintenance on it, and I got that smell, that oh, no. And then it just went on the screen, and it was over.
Oh, dear.
So, you know, we dodged. That was a three-day bullet we dodged.
That's pretty good, man. That's pretty good. Well, yeah, if you don't hear from me for a while, it's bound because I can't get connection. And if I can't get connection, I don't just call in randomly because I want to know what the hell you're talking about to a degree.
I understand. Well, you know, you might be surprised to know, but we worry about you guys when we don't hear from you.
No, I fully understand that. I should have called over Christmas sometime, but I just didn't know when you were on at all over Christmas period, you know what I mean? I was kind of off from just before until, well, a couple of days. Well,
yeah, we took the first 3 days off, Monday and Tuesday. Yeah, Christmas was on we took Monday and Tuesday of both Christmas and New Year's, and so, yeah. But it's nice to be back on a regular schedule now.
Yeah, man, damn straight. I guess
I'm kind of a hard ass, but I hate the holidays.
No, well, I know what you mean, man.
Can't get anything done.
Well, that's it. Yeah, nothing gets done. There's kids everywhere. I mean, I didn't even have kids, and there's kids everywhere. It's ridiculous. But I will be calling back again next Friday, I'm sure. Are you going to be talking to that lady regularly?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to try to make a Friday thing of it.
Well, that's a damn good idea. I think I might have to try and get in on that conversation next time. So.
All right, sounds lovely.
Wicked. Well, take care, Dean. I love to all the listeners.
All right, and back at you, and hey to Hazel.
Yeah, will do, man. Cheers, thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Our good friend Andy in the United Kingdom in Wales. You know what? Let's see if you if these aren't busy signals, which that is, and that is, and that's not. So we'll keep it rolling. Hey, who have I got?
Beep, beep.
Hey, Juanita. How was your big debut?
You know what? I got percentaged.
Oh, no.
Yeah. My little the little guy, he had everything ready for me to sign, and they notarized it, and that was it. And I said, you mean I don't get to be on TV? And he said, no.
Well, yeah, damn the luck.
Percentaged.
But, I was hoping to go to YouTube and see it.
By the way, I love the English accent, don't you?
Oh, I could talk to Andy all day long. But the thing is, Andy's quite good at being anybody he wants to be. One of these days he's gonna he'll call in and do both Lawrence of Arabia and the Hashemite Prince, and it'll be a lot of fun.
Okay, well I'll be checking it out.
Well, I mean, weren't you impressed by his southern accent?
Yeah, that was really good. The thing is that I have a problem with mine is that I think I'm talking fast in my mind,
mm-hmm.
but when you hear it, it's slow as molasses, right? That southern accent.
But see, it's not to me. It's a southern accent's musical to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to sort of retune my brain sometimes to hear, you know, to hear dialects from other parts of the country, and I love them all. I love a Chicago accent, an up east mm-hmm. accent. I love them all, but you know, the southern's what I grew up with, so
yeah.
it just, you know, I don't know, it's hardwired into me, and I go, and no translation problems or anything.
Well, I'm gonna tell you what else happened to me at the county seat. I went by, now this is show you, this is something else. I went by the homestead exemption office to see if I could get some more, that's on my taxes and all.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, I have a mobile home that I bought in 74, and when you first buy them, which was a double wide, I had to buy tags for each side. And then after so long a time, and I don't remember when, but they said, well, you can just switch over and you can just pay just straight out, you know. Well, that's what I've been doing for years. Probably 30 years ago, 1974.
Mm-hmm.
And so I what I wanted was to see, I had seen online where you could change them over to a mobile home, I mean to a regular home, you know, a mobile home. So I thought, well, I'm going to check that out because I can't get any help, you know, any kind of money help, you know, with a mobile home, but maybe I can if it's declared a home, because you sure couldn't make a mobile home out of it now.
No.
But anyhow, So I asked the girl down there at the homestead exemption office, and she looked and she said, "You've got a mobile home?" And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "You're not buying tags?" And I said, "I haven't bought tags in years." And so she had sent me over to the appraiser's office. And the appraiser's office looked up, and they didn't even have a record of my mobile home. And so anyway.
Oh, God, they're going to hit you with the property taxes
well,
now.
That's what one was thinking, you know. So anyway, they told me that I would have to get a number, and they said it'd be inside a closet, and we've tore down so many doors and everything, and God knows where the numbers are.
Might be on the I-beams underneath.
That's what they said it could have been, yeah. But thank goodness it was with my will, because I would have had to hunt it, the titles to the mobile home.
Mm-hmm.
So I called down there and gave them the numbers, and it took all day, but they called me back and told me that that had never been recorded in the county. And so what I have to do, I have to go to the tag agency and get it recorded, you know, and it's just like $10 and something. So, see, you know, I believe in God, and so I said God's looking out for me in his mysterious and serendipitous way.
No, I just hope it doesn't get too mysterious.
But I just decided I'm not going to worry about it if they do. I'll just get me a lawyer if they did try to slap me with all that behind stuff. That would be 30 years at least.
And they can't go back that far. They just couldn't.
But anyway, I'm going to tell you that Carolyn and your wife Agnes is saying they're Cassandra. That's what I call myself, Cassandra.
Well, that makes you the fourth Cassandra, because I got told in the chat room that there's another Cassandra.
You feel like you're beating your head against the wall. You know, it's like, damn.
Yeah. And nobody listening.
No, even people that are supposed to be Democrat sometime, they don't. I don't know what it is, but...
And, you know, that's the thing, Juanita. I get a sense that I'm in a bubble, because most of the people listening to this program and most of the input that I get from people is largely a matter of people saying, yeah, you've got it right, or, you know, we're thinking the right way. And so, you know, every once in a while I go somewhere that I'll meet, you know, one of these so-called centrist Democrats or one of these people, you know, we've got to get along with the other side.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to take them by the shoulders and just shake them. What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
They've never evinced any desire to get along with you. What are you trying to surrender for?
Right. We've been doing that for the last 8 years. I'm tired of it. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, sick and tired. Sure.
We need to take a good 12-step program.
Yeah.
Before they...
And I've got an email here asking if Dennis Kucinich's middle name might be Cassandra.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bless his heart. Well, they always shoot the messenger, don't they?
In this case, they're not even going to waste the ammo. They'll just ignore the messenger.
That's worse sometimes. I think it's worse sometimes. But anyway, I don't know. I'm the eternal optimist and all. Tell Carolyn Kay the next time you talk to her that I used to listen to her when she was on Radio Lift.
Well, I certainly will. When was that?
It's 2 or 3 years ago, and I got to where I can't get him anymore, but yeah, I used to listen. That was my first. They were my virgin left radio left.
Okay.
My virgin experience. And, you know, I tell you, honestly, I don't know what I would have done without you people, because it's like I've told you before, it's just like a solace to the soul, you know.
If it means anything, Juanita, it does the same thing for me.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't have this, if all I could do was sit around and read the little right-wing newspaper from Beckley,
oh,
And, you know, now our cable system's down to nothing but Fox. If I had nothing but Fox and ABC and CBS and NBC News.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
I don't know what I'd do. I couldn't stand it.
And that, you said something about Crowley.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Monica Crowley.
Yeah, Mike Malloy's got some good stuff for her. He says about her.
Well, it's just amazing. I don't know how any of these people stay on the air, but they are viewed as some. I mean, they're like sacred cattle or something.
Yeah.
They're untouchable. And Carolyn Kay is right, because they think that we're doing the work of the angels. We're sharing unbiased information.
No. Bull.
Yeah. Right. Sure. You're unbiased, and you know pigs have wings.
You remember the Carlson girl that was on, used to be...
Oh, Margaret Carlson, sure.
Yeah, and she's supposed to be, a Democrat, and she would go on...
Is that Tucker's mother or sister wife?
They said they're not related. I don't know. But she said, just nobody likes the Al Gore. They just don't like him. And I wrote her an email. Of course, she didn't respond.
No.
And I told her that she didn't know what she was saying, that how she was messing with people. And I told her she was on the side of the devil, you know, or something like that. And I said, don't you ever feel bad about, why don't you say you don't like him? Why say that nobody likes him? Obviously, a lot of people in this country liked him enough to vote for him.
But you see, that doesn't... That's the other thing Carolyn was talking about. That doesn't work within the scope of the narrative.
I didn't get a response, but you write to Helen Thomas or somebody like that, you get a response.
Sure, sure.
Of course, I write her nice letters because I love her. But anyway... Anyway, that's it. That's what happened yesterday, and I've got a bunch of more stuff. I'm having trouble again with Medicare Part D, and for people that don't know what that is, that's our
prescription drug.
Prescription drug.
Yeah.
But anyway, I said I'm just going to let it ride for a while, you know.
Yeah.
And those things I have to.
Hang in there and fight the battles you can fight. My doctor
said to me one time, he said, why don't you do this or that? I said, look, I'm this corporation that I have to run 24 hours a day. And he didn't know what I was talking about, but it's true. You think if you are, you know, go on disability or retirement, you think, you'll have plenty of time. But no, you've got all this other stuff that'll drive you out of.
That's a very, very good point, Juanita. Because I've long held the opinion that the average corporate CEO could not live the life of someone who has to get by on $600 a month.
Right. Absolutely.
They would be suicidal inside of 2 months tops.
Right. Right. And sometimes I think it's planned that way.
Yeah, well.
In fact, Cassandra believes it is.
Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful weekend,
you too.
Dear.
You too. Night, night.
All right, you take care.
You too.
Bye now. And I haven't meant to make things unfront porchy, but they've just kind of worked out that way. Quick email: darn you, Bob Kincaid, for playing the Manfred Mann's Earth Band song. Now I have to go to iTunes and buy it. That was from the Roaring Silence, and the name of the tune was This Side of Paradise. Oh, and listen, this is a general note for those of you, and there are a lot of you, because I try to write back to emails and so forth. To those of you who are Comcast customers, you know, your email ends with Comcast.net. Please be advised that I'm not being an SOB and self-made and not responding to you. I am. But in the last 5 days or so, something has happened between my email address and Comcast whereby everything I send to someone with a Comcast.net email address bounces back at me and says that Comcast has made a unilateral decision that I'm a spammer. No kidding. So, my apologies. I'm not ignoring you. I just want you to know, because I try to be very meticulous with my emails and respond to those that call for a response. And no, Comcast says I can't write to you anymore. Total information awareness. You gotta love it. Well, I'm kind of at a loss. I tell you what, we'll take a little break because I haven't had one for a little bit, and I just, you know, need to grab a quick swig and sit back and catch my breath or whatever. And we'll come back for more of Front Porch Friday and maybe some other stories, that kind of thing. You know the phone numbers, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you've got an unlimited long-distance dialing plan, 304-658-5453. We'll be right back. A little Professor Longhair in the interim. Some news coming up from Labor Radio. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. General Motors is expecting low auto sales this year, and in anticipation, 46,000 workers will be eligible for early retirement buyouts. If that trend continues, the company has not been shy about suggesting capacity could be cut, resulting in more plant closures. company is finalizing details with the United Auto Workers. With writers still on strike, Hollywood directors have made a deal with studios. Jesse Russell reports.
Groundbreaking and substantial are the words being used to describe the contract negotiated between Hollywood directors and studios. Negotiations between the two sides took 5 days, while the writers continued to strike after 2 months. According to the Directors Guild of America's Negotiations Committee, the agreement increases wages and residuals for every year of the contract and implements a new formula for pay based on internet downloads and programs distributed via streaming. The agreement could be a sign that the writer's strike, which has idled most of Hollywood, could be near an end. Internet residuals are at the core of the disagreement between the writers and the studios. The Directors Guild paid $2 million for a study determining the value of new media over the next 10 years.
When the nation celebrates Dr. Martin Luther King Day Monday, hundreds of Smithfield Foods workers are expected to celebrate even more intensely. That's because after taking on the company over the right to take time off work for that holiday, this is the first year that Smithfield Foods is officially recognizing the holiday. Thousands of workers had signed petitions, and others left the plant or stayed home on King Day last year to get the company to allow them this holiday. A collective action paid off. This year, Smithfield Foods is the largest private employer in North Carolina, recognizing the King holiday. In Memphis, the AFL-CIO is part of a several-day-long conference around King Day called Labor and Civil Rights, 40 Years of Keeping the Dream and the Movement Alive. Nearly 1,000 people are coming together between now and Monday to commemorate Dr. King's work and the Labor-Civil Rights Alliance. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, and the Reverend Al Sharpton will be among the speakers. Donations of computer equipment and school supplies will be given to Memphis area students. Here's today's economic report. A new report from the Center for Economic and Policy Research and the Center for Women and Work at Rutgers University says a powerful stimulus package is needed immediately to address U.S. economic weakness. Economist Dean Baker says with the U.S. almost certainly on the verge of recession, a substantial stimulus is needed to lessen the recession's toll and put the nation back on solid financial footing. He says the package should include a tax cut for all workers and be equal to 1% of the gross domestic product to be effective.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Minutes past the hour here at the Horn. I'm Bob. Weekend. Weekend coming. End of the week. And we will go to the phones. Front Porch Friday is well underway if you want to join in. Susan is with us on the line calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, how you doing, dear?
Hi, Bob.
What's up?
I was calling about your comment about Comcast. I wonder if they realize that the Horn is a liberal site, and therefore they are blocking you. They are, let's face it.
Well, but see, okay, to be fair, the address is bob@headonradio.com. It's not headonradionetwork.com, so it doesn't go back to the website. But
radio could be part of their blocking.
Sure, it could be. I've had this happen with Comcast before. It, for some reason or another, it goes up, it goes down. But you're not the only one thinking that way. Cindy has written in from the Great Northwest as well, saying you need to put a big loud ad on the face of the website telling folks that Comcast is blocking the site. This has happened to Citizens for Legitimate Government, she says, to Truth Out, to Buzzflash, and to a whole lot of others. And she says she's going to get right on it because she's got a Comcast address and tell them to get their pipe open. She says they're blocking you for political reasons.
Yeah, there's also an article people really, really need to see. It's up. One of the other news ninjas put it up on the Horn website. I can't remember if it's Comcast or one of the other big telecoms. In Texas, they are going to start charging their customers by the bite.
Well,
instead of a flat fee.
That's not surprising, and it's not not that unusual, really, if you consider the way these people think. It's their bandwidth, damn it, is sort of the approach that they take. You know, never mind the fact that, you know, the government, we the people, facilitated the creation of the Internet and paid for it and all of that. It's their bandwidth.
Yeah. If we're going to kill it, now's the time to do it when it's small. So get on the horn to your, if you'll pardon the pun, read the article, and then get on the horn to your congressional people and scream your heads off.
Good idea. Good idea.
Because they're charging according to usage, which means if, like if you're a news ninja, well, for one thing, we couldn't afford it.
No, and there's, to a certain degree, and it's all very convoluted, there's a certain amount of that that already goes on. For instance, you can only, you know, use so much per month as it stands anyway. There's nobody out there that has unlimited usage. It's just that the ceilings are high enough that very few people ever find it.
Yeah. Oh, well, my cousin did.
Well, we run up against it in a couple of different instances.
You have to.
But it's like, you know, it's like going backwards to the bad old days when, you know, when people were on AOL and were getting billed by the minute.
Yeah, that's exactly what. Only it's going to be worse because you're going to be charged for every keystroke, every period, every zero, you name it, every byte and every space you're going to pay for.
Charming. Can't beat the free market now, can you? I just
you
love
really
it.
You really don't want me to answer that, Bob.
I know. Money-grubbing, greedy SOBs.
Yeah, yes, and a few other comments and swear words.
But see, it's always this way with the telecoms because, you know, it's like long distance. It costs the same amount to call across the street as it does to call across the globe.
Exactly.
It's not like you've got 92 women at switchboards pulling a TRS plug and putting it in a hole and, you know, to connect the thing up from here to there. You know, Sarah doesn't work at the phone company anymore.
Yeah, those days have gone forever. You know, it's all solid state flipping in the switches. And so you don't. There's none of that.
So as a consequence, you know, anybody who pays for long distance is being willfully ripped off.
Yeah. The only thing I can say is, where's the Sherman Antitrust Act when we need it?
Coughing up blood on the back porch. Really. You know, we don't have a government that's interested in using it.
Yeah, it's still on. It's one of those weird. It's fallen into the category of a weird law that's no longer enforced. It's still on the books.
Sure, it is, and it's a vital and useful piece of legislation. But the thing is, it's deemed as like something right next door to communism.
Yeah.
By the laissez-faire, you know, free market pirateers.
That's one of the reasons why, if I can't have Dennis, I want John Edwards in there because I want him to pull the Sherman Antitrust Act out of the dustbin and dust it off and proceed to use it a little hummer.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
The first people I want to use it on are the telecoms.
Bust them up again.
And I don't mean just mean the telecoms. I mean the big media conglomerates. Let's see if Disney and Westinghouse and NBC and all those nice people who have these big media conglomerates and Murdoch like having an antitrust act against them.
Yep. Well,
I don't know about anybody else.
We can hope, but you know, I think Andy may be onto something that the next person to be marginalized will be John Edwards. And if he, and the thing is,
it's already happening.
It's already happening. And the but what's important here is, you know, he's a man of considerable wealth and considerable power. If they can do it to him, they can do it to anybody, and it should come as an object lesson to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, because they will be marginalized once there's a Republican nominee.
Sure.
You'll notice that nobody got run out of the Republican debates.
Yeah.
Tom Tancredo quit on his own. David Dreyer, was that his name? The other guy that was in there. You know, these guys.
Well, Ron Paul got run out of the Fox debate.
Well, he got run out of a debate, but not every debate, and he hasn't been completely marginalized. Because the narrative on the Republican side is to create a broad field, whereas the narrative on the Democratic side is to create a non-field. Because
First they came for the communists.
Well, first they came for Kucinich, then they came for Edwards. And frankly,
well,
you know, what
I was quoting from that point.
I know. Pastor Martin Niemöller, wasn't it?
Niemöller.
But the point though, Susan, is that this is geared toward handing us Hillary Clinton by default. Now, I'm sorry if that displeases some of the pro Clinton crowd for me to say that, but it's the truth. We are having our nominee selected for us again, just like they selected John Kerry for us.
Yeah.
It's taking a little bit more time because there's a little bit more concerted campaign opposition. But the fact of the matter is, you've got a multi-party design on the narrative on the Republican side, and a single nominee narrative operating on the Democratic side, because this is on the Democratic side. And you know this as well as I do, Susan. This is a narrative that the media have had in place since the first time that Flush Flimball declared that Hillary Clinton had presidential ambitions.
Yeah.
The right wing that owns media has been aching to have her as the nominee. And if I was any sort of an independent thinking Democratic voter, I would have to sit up and wonder why they're so itching to run against her.
I shudder to think of the crap they're going to disgorge when they have her. Oh, man.
They're going to they're going to re-kill Vince Foster.
Oh, yeah.
And it'll be the Rose Law Firm all over again.
Yeah.
It'll be Travelgate all over again, sure.
You know, what they can't prove, they're going to make up out of whole cloth.
That's been their M.O. all along.
Aliens... whole nine yards, and it's going to be just ugly,
and you wind up with another Republican in the White House.
Yeah, in which case I'm leaving. If it's Huckabee, I'm leaving. Sorry, Bob, I'm gone. If it's Huckabee, I'm gone.
I know. Well, Susan, have yourself a great evening and a good weekend.
Well, I shall endeavor to do so.
All righty, then.
And give my love to Agnes and the kids.
I sure will. Take care.
Okie doke.
Bye now. Couple of stories out there as we wind our way toward the end of the program. One, I don't know if you saw this or not, but the biggest, most evil organization in the state of West Virginia, folks like our sponsor, Coal River Mountain Watch, and others, like Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, Highlands Conservancy, organizations that actually care about this state. We had a bit of a victory yesterday. $20 million fine levied against Massey Energy, and a consent decree entered in Washington, D.C. with regard to that fine. Relates to all the garbage that they've dumped into streams, the pollution, the toxins, the poisons. And, you know, I believe in mentioning and celebrating every little victory when it happens. On the other hand, it was a bad day to be Bob Murray. Story out of Utah from the Salt Lake Tribune, headline, Crandall Canyon bombshell, months before deadly cave-ins, owners knew of structural woes. Newly released meeting minutes show that in the months before the Crandall Canyon mine disaster, Its co-owners were dealing with serious structural problems, higher than expected costs, and sulfur coal, but were hopeful that plans approved by federal regulators, would get things back on track. This is what happens when you let industry thugs and flacks and hacks run the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Those plans hinged on extracting nearly all of the coal from the South Barrier Pillar. See, they were pulling pillars after all, finally. The 450-foot thick coal wall that helped support the roof of the mine, where 3 months later the walls collapsed, entombing six miners. Three other men were killed in the subsequent rescue effort, as we all remember. The minutes of the meeting show that Bob Murray knew of the severe mine bounce on March 10th that forced the mine to shut down and reposition its operations. And, of course, he got in front of a camera and lied like a rug and said at the time he had no knowledge of the bounce. Salt Lake Tribune got the minutes of the meetings in South Jordan, Utah, between the mine's co-owners via an open records request with the Los Angeles Division of Water and Power, which is a partner in Intermountain Power Agency, a co-owner of the mine. And, of course, Murray went to court to try to stop the records from being released so that no one would know what a filthy liar he is. But California Supreme Court refused to hear the put in place a stay of a decision to release the records, and bang, they came out. It's all there. Bob Murray knew he was sending his miners into a death trap, but every day that he could get a little more coal out of that Widowmaker hole, he knew that he was going to be a little bit richer. Money, money, money. Never mind the blood. Get me the money. All I can suppose is that there are people out there who have absolutely no conscience whatsoever, and that as a consequence, they don't have any trouble sleeping at night. On another topic entirely, but one that is a frequent topic on this program and others on the network, as we talk about right-wing media. Now, if you've ever been around radio, you know that the industry publication, the paper of record, if you will, is a publication called Radio and Records. It's the radio industry. It is to the radio what Billboard is, or what Variety is to Hollywood. And they have this thing that they give away every year, a Lifetime Industry Achievement Award. The Lifetime Industry Achievement Award from Radio and Records this year was due to go to the godfather of right-wing hate, a man by the name, and some of you, I'm sure, are fully, especially West Coasters, are very well aware of Bob Grant. He is, he's a giant to people like old Sean Hannity and Glenn Beck and Mark Levin. Not Mark Levine, not our Mark Levine, but hateful right-wing screech freak Mark Levin. They were going to give the award to Bob Grant, but then somebody sort of tapped Radio and Records on the back of the shoulder and said, do you really want to do this? Pointing out a few things. This is what makes Bob Grant the godfather of right-wing hate. He lost his job in 1996 because on the air, behind the microphone, he wished for the death of Commerce Secretary Ron Brown. But during 60 years in broadcasting, that barely scratches the surface. You want to try some? How about October the 1st, 1992? when he said he had been praying for Magic Johnson to drop dead. What did he say? This is the quote. Why is it taking so long for the HIV to go into full-blown AIDS? June the 2nd, 1992, he was complaining about the fact that there are too many African Americans in New York City. Minorities are the Big Apple's majority. You don't need to read the papers to tell you that. Walk around and you know it. To me, that's a bad thing. I'm a white person. Mm-hmm. Really? Really? He didn't lose his job over that. January 6th, 1992. 1992 is apparently a big year for Bob Grant. He said that the United States was full of, quote, millions of subhumanoid savages who really would feel more at home careening along the sands of the Kalahari or the dry deserts of eastern Kenya, people who, for whatever reason, have not become civilized. April 18th, 1996. You see, these aren't isolated incidents any more than it's an isolated incident when we catch Flush Flimball calling Barack Obama a spade. It's a pity John Fox is busy this evening because he particularly loved this quote. I'd like to get every environmentalist, put them up against a wall and shoot them. Also in April 1996, I hope President Clinton will exchange bodily fluids with an HIV-positive immigrant. And, of course, there's no floor for this freak. Former New York Mayor David Dinkins, who, of course, is an African-American man, called him a washroom attendant. And then perhaps the best of all, he was talking about African-American churchgoers. Churchgoers. And he said, I can't take these screaming savages. Whether they're in that AME church, the African Methodist church, or in the street burning, robbing, looting. Now, here's the fun part. Radio and Records decided not to give this the Klansman the award. And the right wing is absolutely hysterical, having a frenzy about it. Mark Levin has written a protest letter. And Sean Hannity is trying to get a boycott organized against Radio and Records' upcoming convention. Now, for all I care, Radio and Records can go and suck eggs or pound sand or whatever, because they don't even recognize the viability or the existence of radio that goes out over anything except corporate-controlled airwaves. The radio equalizer is positively indignant, saying conservative bloggers sit out controversy. Why? Perhaps even they find it difficult to justify Grant's history of racist, homophobic rhetoric. Radio Equalizer got it right. Don't you love that? I'd like to get every environmentalist, put him up against the wall, and shoot him. Give me some more gin. What a bastard. I guess that's what you got to do to get a Lifetime Achievement Award, though. And they would have. And the thing is, Radio and Records would have gone ahead and given it to him had they not been caught. You're darn right. Oh, meanwhile, just for the fun of it, If you're a right to lifer in Wisconsin, odds are you've recently gotten a little mailing, an informational letter from Wisconsin Right to Life, It's an informational mailer commemorating Roe v. Wade. It contains a little plastic fetus. No, really. Little plastic figure that represents an 11 or 12 week old fetus as a commemoration of Roe v. Wade. Like I said, you keep thinking you found the bottom, you're into the basement, these sleazy bastards have gone as low as they can go, but no. Yeah, really. What kind of a country do we live in? What do you want to bet? I can't tell from the photograph. It's not quite clear enough. I can't tell if the little fetus toy has a lifelike kung fu grip or not. Jiminy. They're mailing out plastic fetuses. My bet is... I bet the little plastic fetus was made in China. What do you want to bet it's got, you know, lead or toxins or maybe... Well, you'd hate to think of a real baby getting hold of it and choking on it or something. But that's okay with Wisconsin Right to Life because, hey, those are already born babies and who gives a damn about them? Let them choke to death on the little plastic fetuses. We don't care. We just want to control women's insides. Praise God. They mailed these out to 44,000 people. 44,000 people. Breathtaking, isn't it? That means that there's 44,000 people who have already given to Wisconsin Right to Life in the past. I have to say that it just boggles the mind.
Go to sleep, you little baby.
Go to sleep.
Your mama's gone away and your dad's gonna stay. Don't leave nobody but the baby. Go to sleep, you little baby.
Go to sleep, you little baby.
Go to sleep, you little baby.
Go to sleep, you little baby.
Everybody's gone in the cotton and the corn. Didn't leave nobody but the baby.
You're sweet little baby,
you're sweet little baby,
you're sweet little baby.
Honey and the rock and the sugar don't stop. Gonna bring a bottle to the baby. Don't you weep, pretty baby.
Don't you weep, pretty baby.
Don't you weep, pretty baby.
Don't you weep.
She's long gone with her red shoes on. Gonna need another loving baby.
How'd the shoes get so doggone red? That's what I want to know.
Probably from going to the abortion clinic.
Right wingers. Oh my God. Sometimes it really is. It's tough to live in a country with them. Hi, who have I got?
Hey, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
Doing pretty good. How are you?
Astonished, you know, stunned.
Yep. I've been appreciating your comments. I was wondering, where did you get that list of comments from Bob Grant?
That was at thinkprogress.org.
Okay.
And they're all sourced.
Okay. I'll check that out. And another thing, I don't know if she's listening, but I want to thank BJ. I want to let her know that I received the films that she... sent.
Oh, did you already order them?
Yes, I did. Rise Up West Virginia, and also Mountain Morning.
Oh, wow. So you've got both. Have you had a chance to watch them yet?
Not yet. Not yet. I just got back from a trip to my post office box, though, and I'm looking forward to checking them out this weekend for sure.
Well, I'm told that the turnout for the premiere was big, and that a good time was had by all, and that it is, and that Rise Up is an absolutely stunning piece of filmmaking.
Great, I appreciated even the flyer that they sent as well. You and I have discussed in the past how sometimes progressive organizations, they kind of work off of this template, which often doesn't involve action and, you know, good ideas and information, but the Rise Up group sent this flyer, real simple, a couple pictures and some information on just the devastation going on, the water contamination and the polluted air and the threats to children and on and on and on. You know, Hannity and all of them talk about security all the time.
Yeah.
But they somehow leave out these parts. But anyway, it's informative, and they also encourage on this flyer to, if you can, donate additional DVDs to libraries or churches, community organizations, and newspaper editors, and so forth. And I just really appreciated that they shared that idea. I think it's a very good tactic. So,
well, you know, BJ is on. Nobody's ever going to accuse BJ of underthinking anything. She tries to take in all eventualities, and I think one of the things that slowed her down in the making of this film was the really tortured process of trying to figure out not what to put in, but what to leave out.
Right, and I'm sure funding was very. I don't know how that went, but I'm sure it was a struggle in many ways.
And this week, as she did say on the air, this week. A member of the legislature, every single member of the West Virginia legislature, has received a copy of Mountain Morning.
That's great. That's great. See, we have our own media networks, like you were talking about, that spider web kind of that exists already in many ways, and I think can be expanded.
I think it can be, but the problem, and I'm not trying to. I'm not trying to focus on the negative, but the problem is not it's not one necessarily of growing it, but of sustaining what we have.
True.
Because right. I don't know of any so-called progressive or liberal or left-wing media outlets that are just sitting pat or sitting flush.
Right.
I can't open my email without seeing one of these organizations that I think the world of. Whether it's Truth Out or Alternet or Common Dreams or any of them that aren't saying, you know, please, we're just trying to make it to next month.
Yeah.
And it kills me that I can't just, because I'm such a geek for this stuff that if I had it, I'd spend a day writing checks.
Yep.
Because I believe in what these people are doing.
Definitely. You know, and so many good magazines have faced these big increases in postage and in printing. You know, again, somehow the large conglomerates get these great breaks on their printing costs and their mailing costs, but the prices keep going up for smaller independent outfits.
I'm really, really excited to read at the possibility of reading this Powell memo whenever Carolyn gets around to sending me the link. I've heard about it for years, but I've never actually sat down and read it. Because I believe everything that she said about it, but what I wonder is if there's anything for liberals or progressives or left wingers whatever to take away as well. Because for instance, just as an example of how they make it work, Jonah Goldberg's book. I've mentioned it a few times. God forbid that me mentioning this book made anybody go out and buy it. I think I'd get in a warm bath with a razor blade if I thought that. You know, with its little red book jacket and its smiley face with the Hitler mustache and Hitler was a liberal and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But Preston, and I'm not trying to cut you off, but I just want to finish this real quick.
Sure, sure.
Go look at the New York Times review of books and look at their, you know, bestseller list. And if he's on there, I guarantee you're going to see one of those little dagger symbols next to the book. And you know what that means.
That it was subsidized by...
That means that
Daddy Warbucks.
Yeah, the book has been bought in bulk.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, pretty soon, you'll if you go to the right-wing websites, you'll find that every right-wing website has 20 dozen crates of this book sitting around, and they'll say, well, it's a $24.95 value in the bookstore, but if you'll send us a contribution, we'll send you a copy of the book.
Yeah, those little plastic babies, probably made of lead, probably are subsidized to a degree as well.
Well, sure they are. Sure they are.
Marketing that they've got a lot of money to do that stuff.
Consider a story that our good friend Alan the Trucker gave to Peter Godbold last night on his program. I saved the link because I was hoping I would have time to get around to it. The city council of Birmingham, Alabama, a city council that is in a budget shortfall. They're slashing $18 million from vacant positions, $5 million in cultural arts funding, $4 million from worker overtime, all in an effort to close a $30 million budget gap, a $30 million budget deficit. Guess what they did, Preston? They just gave Eagle Forum of Alabama $15,000 to bring Phyllis Schlafly to Birmingham.
Right, right. Now, that actually brings up something interesting I've noted about Mike Huckabee. I saw a talk he gave on C-SPAN to the Detroit Economic Club, and he mentioned how a school needs to be more holistic, and that we should include, once again, music and arts schooling.
I've heard him say that in the debate, and you know what? I don't have a fight with him on that.
Nor do I.
But the problem with somebody like radical fundamentalist cleric Mike Huckabee is that as soon as you say, okay, we're going to do it, then he steps in and says, okay, and the music program's going to include nothing but the Baptist hymnal.
We're
all going to be painting pictures of Jesus.
Right.
And that's his art program.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't comment on if he'd make it that specific.
Well, I'm using a little bit of artistic license here, Preston.
Sure. Okay. I agree with that.
But I mean, he is first, last, and always a right winger, and as a consequence of that, I'm sure that if you did the journalistic legwork to dig around through a few of his speeches, somewhere along the way, you would find him waxing grandiloquently disgusted about, Robert Mapplethorpe.
Yeah, well, and Peter Godbold has done really good work in that regard, and some of his comments regarding the gay community. And but by the way, is he live tonight? Is Peter live tonight?
Peter is live.
Oh, cool. I'll have to give him a holla. But anyway, on Huckabee, something else about him that I've noticed that I found interesting, and again, I accept the criticisms. I think they're valid. But the way he's being attacked by people like Sean Hannity, I find is very interesting. They denounce his populism. He did raise taxes, and he defends it. And things like that, they really want Romney instead, who is just another corporate PR agent, basically.
Yeah, that certainly seems that way. I mean, I've seen other right-wingers doing that sort of attack sort of stuff, too. But you know, Preston, that I frequently credit the right, the right-wing ideas are crazy, but their execution of them is quite sound.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Forgive me if, with regard to their objections to Huckabee, that I don't detect a little bit of, please don't throw me in that old briar patch.
There's that going on, too, I'm sure. But notice also how it seems the progressive community is being kind of more focused on, like, the rifts between, say, Obama and Clinton. I mean, it's like one anecdote after another about how the Obama campaign went after Hillary Clinton because, this caucus thing in Nevada and then vice versa. And, we're always kind of you know, they're seemingly sniping at each other all the time. And I think there are many ways in which they agree on a lot more. And take, say, Obama's recent comment on Reagan. He certainly will alienate himself from progressives by that remark. At the same time, I think it was useful because I think that question was asked of him to get him to say something about Reagan that was negative and thus lose the appeal that he is showing towards Republicans and independents, which is a huge threat to their, you know, their electoral base. I mean, he is appealing to Republicans, and he has a much more positive message. He actually mentioned the Pinkertons in one of his speeches that he gave on C-SPAN. So, you know, yes, we should condemn the Reagan remark, but also applaud him for him making a comment about the Pinkertons in a positive light. You see what I'm saying? I'm not sure.
I do see what you're saying, and I think central to all of this is the effort to create, and you said it very well, the effort to create perceived perception of differences between him and Senator Clinton, because, frankly, there aren't. I mean, the business over race, this is all soap opera stuff. If you're going to tell me there's a policy difference between the two, I want to know what the policy is and what the policy difference is. How many journalists are there out there that are talking about the profound differences between the Clinton health plan and the Obama health plan?
Right, and I'm sorry, I misspoke earlier. When he brought the Pinkertons, he was being critical of the Pinkertons as being, you know, the kind of paramilitary thugs who oppressed labor movements. So he condemned them. I misspoke earlier.
No, I knew what you were getting. I knew what you.
So in those moments, they're different. And in the moments when Hillary Clinton brings up the Children's Defense Fund, she's being different. Bill Clinton as well, you know, I condemn him and even more so his administration for their assault on Iraq. You know, this wasn't something new entirely from the neocons. We've been assaulting that country for years, and they should be condemned for that. At the same time, Bill Clinton has an ally like Paul Hawken, who wrote that wonderful book, you know, the one you quote from sometimes.
The Blessed Unrest.
Yes, yes. He blurbed. Clinton actually wrote a kind review on the back of his earlier book called Natural Capitalism. So, and I think for that sort of action, that's when the right wing really, you know, they don't want people to even have any consciousness of this part of Bill Clinton.
Oh, no, they don't. And all over the place, all over the internet today, is this clip of Bill Clinton taking on a reporter asking him about the Nevada caucus issue.
Right, always showing us in our worst moments. So they're kind of always throwing these rotten vegetables at us. And so I just wanted to share that that part of these kind of candidate discussions that I noticed. I mean, the PR industry actually has a term for it. They call it perception management.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I think there's useful PR. When I see some groups promoting, good independent DVDs, I mean, the left has to develop its own public relations networks and strategies.
But that's the thing. I keep coming back to it, Preston. In some ways, I think we're a little cheap.
Yeah.
If you compare perception and information management within the right wing stream, and I don't, you know, I'm not necessarily endorsing what they've done, but rather how they've gone about it. They're supposed to be the tight fisted, we are about making money. But you know what? They spend money like it's going out of style when it comes to getting their message out. We don't.
Yep.